Welcome back. Another episode of the Sunday Puncher Podcast. I'm here with Tom and Fred. It is Sunday night. Chiefs playing the Packers. No Patrick Mahomes, so I guess we're not watching that game. Well, Tom, you weren't watching anyway because, you know, for some reason you don't like the NFL, which baffles me. You're not a real American or something. So
not a fan.
Not a fan. Probably because your local team sucks. Shout out the Jets. We got the World Series going on, though. Tom, you watching that?
I am not watching the World Series either.
NBA? Knicks?
Just
RJ?
Boxing. Just boxing for me.
Tom only watches cricket other than boxing.
Well, no, good thing darts. He has a Dazen subscription.
I got to watch some sweet darts while I was watching the Darts European Championship on MultiView on Dazen when I was watching the World Boxing Super Series. That's the real value.
Yeah, so your Dazen's already paying off.
Yeah. Better than the $75 pay-per-view starring Deontay Wilder and Luis Ortiz.
Yeah, I mean, my God, no darts. No dart content whatsoever.
Yesterday, we did get a pretty good fight between Regis Progre and Josh Taylor. Josh Taylor won a majority decision with one strange scorecard, but not completely, like, indefensible or irresponsible. But I tried to tell you guys last week, I tried to tell you, listener, from the start of the tournament, Josh Taylor was going to beat Regis Progre. We're going to get right into that. But I want to ask you two first, before, like, just starting us off on this conversation, was this the result that you expected, Tom?
I mean, I knew the fight was going to be competitive. Going back to the start of the tournament, I felt these guys were going to be in the finals. Maybe Brancic might upset Taylor, but I was pretty much expecting that. And I was expecting it to be a competitive fight, but it's always like when you see the fights actually play out, I mean, I said a similar thing with Spence Porter. It's like you're, you know, just not used to seeing each of them get hit that much. You're not seeing, you know, used to seeing such a physical fight over the 12-round distance. So it was still surprising to me to see it play out, even if beforehand I could have said, you know, in a detached way, oh, that might happen. You know, you might see a competitive fight where one guy seems to kind of take over, win, you know, the majority of the minutes of the fight and get a decision. I'd just say besides that, I mean, I always felt in my gut, as much as I could say that in a detached way, oh, you know, Brancic might play a role, Taylor's good, we don't know how good Progre is. I always felt in my gut Progre was going to win. I mean, maybe that's just because he was the American fighter that I had more of a rooting interest in. But I was still surprised to see him get, you know, hit so cleanly in the fight, to seem to get hurt a few times, and if not hurt, staggered at least, or, you know, pushed off balance. But, you know, and not have his hand raised at the end of the tournament. It still feels weird that he has a loss in his record. I don't know. What about you?
He even never lost.
Well, now he lost.
He barely even never lost.
What about you, Fred? Was this the result that you expected? Now, last week you gave a kind of a non-committal answer. You said, well,
you're
Josh
trying
Taylor
to rewrite
will,
history.
Well, you just Josh said Taylor. Josh Taylor by rabbit punch. Yeah. And then you went on to slander Josh Taylor by saying that he's going to rabbit punch. And you agreed with Tom. I went back and listened just to make sure that I didn't misrepresent you. And what you said was that you agreed with Tom in saying that Progre is the better fighter. Now, I'll give it to you. You picked Josh Taylor to win the fight, though. No, make no qualms about that. But you also did say that Regis Progre better than Josh Taylor. We know that that is not the case.
Well, like a true champion, Josh Taylor added another weapon to his arsenal, that being the shoulder shrug. So, you know, that he overcame his you know, I don't know, limitations.
What limitations? He didn't look like he had any. You want to talk about limitations? You better talk about Regis Progre.
Yeah, Regis Progre, God, I think I rolled over. He let Taylor just punch him or like butt him around the entire fight. He's lead to the shoulder. He's like Shaq clearing the paint back in the old, you know, Shaq days.
Don't talk to me about Shaq.
Yeah, he was a Shaq day. He just
you
throws
from
his shoulder
LA?
And knocks him away. Neither was Shaq.
Oh, but you know where he was from?
Louisiana.
Where's Regis Progre from?
Louisiana, so we should have known.
Okay. Look, this was the result that I expected. The one thing that I didn't expect was the method. I didn't think... So what I thought was going to happen and what I laid out last week was that Josh Taylor was just going to outbox Prograis. That Prograis would buy into his own hype, come in there thinking that he was just going to knock Taylor out, and then Prograis would just outbox him. But like, that didn't happen whatsoever. I don't think that Taylor relied on his boxing skills to beat Prograis. He didn't need to. Like, to me, heading into the fight, Prograis had never showed at any point in his career like that he was able to clearly outbox anybody. And so I had the right guy winning when I picked Josh Taylor, but and it wasn't because I thought he was a cheater like you, Fred. I legitimately disagreed because Taylor's the better fighter. He just was the better fighter. I mean, you kind of got into it a little bit, Fred, but like,
just trying to big up your pick. This is all just revisionism.
Yeah, I feel like this is a little overplayed. I definitely didn't hear you make a loud and clear pick for Taylor last
week. You're walking around with Josh Taylor tattoo.
Rewind the tape, because I went back and replayed it just to make sure, you know, because obviously somebody could pull it up.
Edited, so how do we know that that was actually the fake broadcast?
News.
Yeah, you could have spliced that in.
Listen to you guys. Fred, how did Taylor win the fight? Because I think anybody watching the fight could look at it and say, okay, well, Prograis looks like the better athlete heading into the fight, but like, how did Taylor actually win?
He's bullied him. That's all I saw. He pushed Prograis around, and Prograis didn't try to offer up any resistance to him, really. You know, like I said, like, he's throwing that shoulder all over like mad, and Prograis just took it. That's usually, like, if a guy keeps butting you with his shoulder like that, that's when he starts throwing dick punches, you know? But Prograis didn't. He just let himself get just pushed around the ring. You know, Taylor had a bit of size advantage, and he used it on him.
What about
that's all I saw. I'm on Eddie Futch here. That's all I.
Yeah, know. I mean, I'm not going to give a technical breakdown either. I just say I got the sense that Prograis was too confident coming in. That, you know, it felt like all through the tournament, all leading into the fight, he didn't envision an outcome in which he would lose the fight. And it just felt like very early on he was being put in a position that he hadn't planned for, mentally or physically prepared for.
You two sound like Top Rank right now, like trying to cover things up. Look, here's the thing. One of the things that I noticed really early in the fight was that Prograis tried to stand his ground in the center of the ring. And he tried to like trade with Prograis and to like land these powerful shots that was supposed to make Taylor, I don't know, take something out of the gas tank or whatever. But like, what I noticed early was that as much as Prograis tried to stand in the center of the ring, Taylor was moving him. And that's what shocked me in the fight, really, was how physically strong Josh Taylor was. I feel like he was the stronger guy in that ring. And I think that really hurt Prograis by exerting so much energy early in the fight that he had nothing going down the stretch. I mean, he was completely gassed. He had his mouth open, looking like Anthony Joshua in the fourth round of a fight. And there were times where Taylor like actually bullied Prograis, which you alluded to, Fred. And I think that nobody saw that angle playing out. And the other thing was like, Josh Taylor looked like a clever fighter in there. Like, he was able to outbox Prograis on the back foot. He walked him down. He just beat him up. And he really took, like, he went to school. He took Prograis to school when he went inside. Like, Prograis really looked like a poor fighter on the inside. And to me, it looked like Regis Prograis is a guy who maybe had plan A and he had plan B. Josh Taylor comes in and this guy shows him a bunch of different things. He changed the looks. And Floyd used to do this all the time in fights, and this is why guys were clueless against him. And I'm not trying to make a comparison, but I'm just saying, if you provide a different look to a guy, something that they hadn't game planned for, it throws them off their game. And it's up to the good fighters to adapt and come up with something else and still be effective. Prograis couldn't do that. He got beat on a physical level, but also strategically too, in my opinion. You guys want to challenge that?
No,
I think you're kind of underselling what Prograis actually did. I mean, you know, Prograis seemed to really redden his body early, completely closed, you know, we haven't mentioned this at all, completely closed the left side of Taylor's face. I mean, or the right side of Taylor's face. I mean, Progre was effective, but, you know, you touched on something which is a phenomenon you see frequently in fights. I mean, if a fighter heavily invests in the body but doesn't really hurt their opponent that much, it can take more out of the, you know, it can do more harm to them than their opponent. Sort of an odd pull, but I remember Jesse Vargas against Adrian Broner seemed to completely sell out trying to go for the body. And then in the second half of the fight, he was the one who looked tired. You know, felt like that a little bit.
That was something that I noticed too. Progre was trying to make that effort to go to the body, but like it just didn't have any effect. There was no slowdown on Taylor's part. And, you know, you're right. It is something that it's there's a high risk there that if you do that, it doesn't pay off and the judges don't score it. And that's another thing. Taylor has a style that I think plays to judges a bit more. He's got more of an amateur background. I mean, it's, to me, I'm watching that fight and I'm like, okay, Taylor's looking obvious. It looks obvious like he's winning the fight. Now, there were rounds where I thought Progre did very well, but like, I'm like, it's close. They're probably going to give it to Taylor. Now let me ask you guys, cause Tom, you were high on Progre coming into the fight. You specifically said that if Josh Taylor is an 8, then Progre must be a 9. So,
That's not exactly what I said.
That's exactly what you said. I listened back to
Tom actually said he was at 11.
There we go.
No. Just to go back, I said we're going to find out in the fight whether, you know, we've seen a little bit more of Progre. You know, I'm not recapping just for an argument. I think it's useful in discussing the fight. It's like Progre coming in, we hadn't really seen his ceiling as much, definitely looked to be physically the better athlete. But Taylor arguably had a better resume and had, you know, seemed to have more experience on paper. So we were going to find out which one was the winning argument out of those two. So I said, as a hypothetical, if I see Progre winning, it would be because he's an 8 or he's a 9, Taylor's an 8. And I meant to apply vice versa. You know, we'll find out. But yeah, anyway, obviously in my gut, we'll, I did feel Progre was going to win. But anyway, we can get to the topic. So yeah, I think is the question here is, Progre salvageable?
Yeah, do you think he's salvageable? I mean, he's 30 years old. I think he might be a little older than 30, actually. This is the first big fight of his career, really, against another top guy. And top, now we know, Josh Taylor is a top guy. He's not with a big promoter, doesn't have a big network deal. Do you think there's something salvageable there for Regis Progre? Can he reach the potential that maybe you saw for him prior to the fight?
I mean, yes and no. I mean, the potential I saw beforehand was that he could be a B-side potentially to Spence or Crawford, you know, or if he signed to the PBC, more of a player at welterweight potentially. I mean, both of these guys are outgrowing the division. So I really think of them, their future is more in terms of welterweight than junior welterweight. And, you know, maybe or maybe not will he reach that level, but he's still definitely going to have a good career. I mean, there's still heavy competition for fighters between, you know, the various promoters at Dazen, Top Rank, and the PBC. I mean, the example I was thinking of was Amir Imam. I mean, if Top Rank signed Amir Imam and they're going to try to do something with him, there will be something to do with Regis Progre. I mean, and, you know, I'll just say, like, I thought it was completely fair to score the fight for Taylor. It was still a very competitive fight. I mean, I as much as I would say the scorecards, I didn't think were even that crazy, because it was the type of fight where, you know, in each round there was enough where you could find a case for Taylor that it could be a wide card for him. Progre still did a lot of good work. I mean, you know, I always, you know, I love making my highlight clips. I always think about just, you know, moments at a time in a fight, you know, one, you know, fighter landing a good shot out, boxing a fighter in a stanza. And like, Progre did a lot of good work in that fight. I mean, I think just to say that he's done because he lost a decision and, you know, Taylor was the better man on the night, I think he still has some good business too. I mean, let's just say, you know, in December, would you rather see him or Mean Machine against Crawford? I would still rather see Regis Progre. I mean, I just still think when you compare the alternative, some of the fights these guys are taking, he's still going to have some business to do in his career.
So you think that there's a future in terms of, like, he's going to get fights. He'll be in meaningful fights, and he'll also probably be able to make some money off of his name at this point, but it doesn't sound like you think that he's ever going to achieve, being a world champion, especially if he goes out to welterweight, something like that. Like the legacy is just not going to be built with a Progre.
Yeah, I mean, look, I never really thought that. I mean, I thought the best case scenario was for him to be in the mix at 147, or, you know, potentially a good pay-per-view B-side to Spencer Crawford. Like, I mean, Spence already beat him like four times in the amateurs or something like that. You know, it never seemed.
Usyk.
Porter did. I'm not sure if you mean that as a joke, but
it's a joke.
Well, okay. anyway, point being, I never saw him as the future, you know, top dog, pay-per-view A-side, multi-division champ, really. I thought the best case scenario was he'd be in the mix, and I feel like he's still going to probably be in the mix, but, with a little bit of tarnish.
I've met Progre. I've seen him up close and personal. I never felt that he had a shot at welterweight. Like, to me, Progre is probably smaller than Mikey Garcia. I just can't see this guy being successful at 147. Now, 140 is a different conversation. And we've seen that Progre has had moments where he's looked sensational at 140, but it ain't happening at 147. That much I am pretty confident about.
Let's just clarify that. He fought at 152 as an amateur, and he's had trouble making, I've joked about it before, but I mean, he's had trouble making weight.
This is a sketchy one, Tom. This is a sketchy one, because have you ever seen Progre look shredded? Does it look like Progre could drop down or lose some more of his weight? I think so. Like, he never looks like Tim Bradley at a weigh-in.
Some people just don't have that physique. I'll say again, I mean, physically,
Garcia looks a lot different at 135 than he does at 140.
Physically, he's basically the same size as Keith Thurman, Danny Garcia. I mean, Sean Porter is, that's a separate thing. But I mean, at least frame size, Progre is bigger. He's about the same size as those guys. I've met and talked to all of those guys. And, just by dimension, he is. And again, he fought as an amateur at 152, and he's had trouble making weight. I mean, I don't think there's like a heavy argument that, I didn't say he's going to clean up the division, but I mean, he's like physically the same size as Danny Garcia and Keith Thurman. Danny Garcia, another guy who came up. He's the same size as those guys.
I think what's salvageable for Progre the most is that the guy can talk. He's got it. Whatever it is, he's got it. And like, if he had the opportunity to really be front and center, to really do to talk for people to hear him, to get good interviews too. Like, Progre could be a name. He's not going to be like the number one guy in a division. It's very unlikely. And we just saw why yesterday. And it's probably not likely that he's going to grow that much, given that he's 30 years old. And like, I don't want to say, Progre isn't good or anything, but like, I think for the most part, it's really rare that you see a fighter at the age of 30 change much. They're usually a finished product at this point, and while they may improve or decline in some aspects of their game, you don't see a guy completely revamp themselves. So I'm not that convinced as like far as Progre being a number one guy, but like, can he be a really interesting opponent? Could he be an interesting opponent for Adrian Granados or Robert Easter Jr.? I think so. I think him and Alex Saucedo is a great fight. Like, there's definitely options out there for Progre. And like, he comes in as a guy that, while he's not going to be the A side, we know that. Progre, like, for some reason, he cannot draw. But if you give him that opportunity to be the B side, I think he could bring interest to a fight that otherwise wouldn't have it. Now, on the Top Rank broadcast, there was something real interesting. They're talking to Terrence Crawford, and they're bringing up Josh Taylor's win over Regis Progre. How confident are you that Josh Taylor is a future opponent for Terrence Crawford? Fred? We haven't heard from you. I don't even know if Fred's still here.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I don't know if Fred's on the call anymore.
Name me one person that Josh Taylor's beats better than Chris Algieri.
Regis Progre? No. Wait, real talk. Anybody
could be a future opponent.
Real talk. Is Josh Taylor better than Chris Algieri?
Yes.
I don't know. Listener, if you let Chris Algieri rabbit punch,
you better
a lot.
Tweet at us. I want to know who's better, Chris Algieri.
Can or Chris Algieri rabbit punch as much as
not
Josh
if you're
Taylor.
British though? If you're British, I know what you're going to say. It's not fair. I want to hear from somebody from New York. Who's better? And we're not talking. Oh, Regis Progre versus Chris Algieri. Actually, that's his next fight. It's got no. Chris Algieri's next fight is actually going to be it for a world title. I bet. Chris Algieri
was telling everyone who would listen that he was going to fight Maurice Hooker if he had beaten Jose Ramirez, that he was next in line.
Well, he thought because Maurice Hooker, no longer world champion at 140, as we famously know. Anyway, what was even the Terrence Crawford versus Josh Taylor? Go, Fred.
You said can he be an opponent?
Yeah.
Well, anything can happen.
Okay, don't be stupid.
I'm saying, can he be a legitimate opponent?
Okay, there we go.
No. Crawford beat the living because Crawford beat the living shit out of him.
Now, you're a guy that has been on the record very critical of Terrence Crawford in the past. You did not like what you saw from Crawford when he faced Jose Benavides. And now you're sitting here and telling me that Josh Taylor would not be a legitimate opponent for Terrence Crawford. By the way, compared to some of the other guys that Crawford has fought, namely Igis Kavalauskas, how much worse is Josh Taylor?
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely where I am. I think he would at least be a very good B-side compared to the alternatives.
Go on, Fred.
Yeah, but that's because you're wrong.
I'm fine with being wrong. Oh, you know I love Crawford. You're the one that doesn't like Crawford, so let me have it.
What do you mean? How did I get to not liking Crawford? I just call Crawford when he fights like trash. I still like Crawford. I've always liked Crawford.
Yeah, that's the thing. He's fighting trash. Taylor is better than trash.
Not really. You think of this. Just imagine.
Oh, my God. What a hater.
Just imagine we saw Terrence Crawford dick punch Amir Khan to death, right? So now I think
he
what happened.
He didn't die, first, just for the record.
Well, his boxing life is dead. You know, oh. He's not getting $6 million from no one.
Wow, it was so lively before.
Well, hey, you guys wanted me to talk, so I'm talking.
All right, go.
Now, just
go.
Imagine the first time that Josh Taylor rabbit punches Terrence Crawford or tries to throw a shoulder into him. Guess what's going to happen? He's going to mug him back. He's not going to let himself get pushed around.
Okay.
He ain't doing that, man. Crawford's done worse thing the guys who touches Monte Carlo.
Okay, I knew you were going to get that in. I knew there was some joke about a car being up on blocks or something.
It's just not. So, yeah, he could be an opponent. But Crawford's just going to muscle him. He's just going to hurt him. Yeah. Because that's it, if he comes at him. Yeah. He tries any of that trash fouling, and it's going to be a very ugly fight. And Bud will come out on top of it. So, but you know, who knows? Might make the fight. You never know what Bob's going to do.
Do you think it's likely that they'll make the fight?
At 147? That? No. I don't think even Top Rank's that desperate yet.
You sure? There is Igis Kavalauskas. The dude just barely. That dude barely even ever lost, but he drew with Ray Robinson.
That's Top Rank still making money on that, though. You know, now Taylor's probably got options on him from, like, Eddie. And so is Bob really going to want to do that? And they're going to sit there, no, he's the Ollie Trophy winner, blah, blah, blah. It should be under the zone. And it's just, I don't know.
Can I clarify this a bit? Because I feel like we're sort of circling this. So Taylor is with MTK, who has a deal and a relationship with Top Rank already. So, I think it's extremely likely that he's going to just walk into a situation with Top Rank. I mean,
well,
similar
his promoter
if not,
is not MTK. Cyclone
right, MTK
is the promoter,
is his manager.
Who is the same promoter that dealt with Carl Frampton until they got caught, I believe, allegedly embezzling money from Frampton. Something like that.
So, yeah, I personally think it's extremely likely there's going to be a meeting between Taylor's management and Top Rank and figure out what they want to do. I mean, Taylor was very vocal. The fight that he wants more than anything else at this point is Jose Ramirez. And I think it's extremely likely that he's going to, you know, he and his management are going to sit down with Top Rank and they're going to figure out a multi-fight relationship.
Yeah, but he was talking about Terrence Crawford. Now you're talking about Jose Ramirez.
Well, I'm telling you both that he's not going to get the Ramirez fight because Ramirez is also on the short list to fight Terrence Crawford. And I know for a fact Bob Arum is not stupid. And he's not going to have one of those go into a fight with Terrence Crawford having beaten or having lost to the other. Both names that will be on Terrence Crawford's resume, and they will be wins for Terrence Crawford.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's my point when it's like, okay, we mention Jose Ramirez, and we mention Terrence Crawford, and we mention Josh Taylor. I think the most likely thing that's going to happen is that Taylor is going to get a multi-fight deal with Top Rank. He'll headline some shitty card similar to Fury because, you know, he has the belts, so he can headline a card for ESPN. You know, that's what they need, the title.
Will he face Rey Mysterio at Crown Jewel?
We can only wish. You know, look, let's just be blunt. He's white. Top Rank's going to, like, they're going to love to show him on ESPN. And, you know, they're going to, like, Kriegel's going to find some shit, some skeletons in his closet he's going to love to talk about. And the most likely thing is, yeah, I think you said it. I mean, what generates more money, having Jose Ramirez and Josh Taylor fight each other or having each of them separately fight Terrence Crawford? And I think that's the answer.
Fred, you got anything you want to add?
No, I'm not going to pay future promoter. What is this, like a... Are we playing a game now? It's like, who the fuck knows what the Top Rank's going to do? I got to wait to the new year because right now we're at the end, so everyone's talking nonsense. I gotta sort of test the air at the start of the next year, and then you'll sort of see what they're going to do. Because Bob sort of gives away the game plan once, you know, once Mean Machine's out of the way. He'll sort of reveal what's going to happen. So other than that, I don't know. So yeah, Top Rank will probably try to keep it in-house because, you know.
Because they're not stupid.
Yeah, and they're also further away now because of Spence's, you know, accident. So you don't know. So it'll be whatever. I don't know. Crawford will just beat up whoever they put in front of him. I know he's not going to let some UK dude push him around. That's all I know.
Well, I'll just say now, early prediction, I think Taylor is better than anyone Crawford has fought at 147 so far. I don't think that's really a stretch. I think Taylor would be, you know.
He's not better than Jeff Horn. Come on.
I mean, it's only been Jeff Horn and Jose Benavidez. Like, it's not a long list, guys.
Yeah, but again,
Jeff Horn took Manny Pacquiao and pushed him around the ring and made him his child.
He also nearly got beat up by anaphylactic shock.
And Keith Thurman, the dude that, you know, you guys love so much.
Enough.
He got his ass beat by Manny.
Okay, hold on. You're slandering PBC guys.
You are out of line.
Tom's got a little bead of sweat on his forehead.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, God, if these guys keep talking like this, Kobe Bean's not going to be my friend anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, anyway, I'm ready to move on. I feel like we're going around in circles.
I don't know. Who hasn't lost a fight to a stripper? That's all I know.
So what do you think is more likely? Josh Taylor fights Terrence Crawford or the field?
Well, I already said he's going to fight Terrence Crawford, so I don't know. I guess that's for Fred.
Fred.
I don't even care about Josh Taylor anymore. I really don't.
Great answer. We'll move on. Yeah. To something you care more about.
We're missing the best fight of the night, of course.
Which was Derek Chisora versus Dylan Price. Just kidding, David Price. So I got to tell you guys, I thought this was the most fun fight of the day. I like really enjoyed this fight until it ended, and I was a little disappointed. And like, I feel bad in a way because I'm like, okay, Chisora is going to hurt David Price at some point. And then it looked like he hurt him. And then it was like, I would like to see this through to the end. But then there was a part of me that was like, I really don't need to see David Price like get killed here. But there was a part of me that just wanted to see the fight, you know, reach its conclusion, if you catch my drift here. And so I was left like a little deflated. However, I had a lot of fun watching this fight. I didn't think I was going to like it. Like, I really don't like Derek Chisora as a boxer. I think he's pretty boring. David Price looks like a guy that knows he's going to lose and can't, like, has no poker face about it. So I guess the question is, does Derek Chisora deserve a title shot at this point?
What title?
That's actually, that's a poignant question that you just asked there. And I'm talking about one of the four major sanctioning bodies. So that would be the winner of Ruiz and Joshua, or the winner of Wilder Ortiz.
Yeah, I think another way to say it, could it be a plausible B-side from one of the top guys?
No. No. Derek Chisora isn't a very good boxer.
But you don't think that the momentum that he's built, and he's been somewhat impressive. Somewhat impressive in spurts in the fights, you know, when he lands his left hook, and then basically the entire fight with Price, although Price did look to buckle him at one point. I don't know what happened there, but it looked like his knee just like shot out from under him, but whatever. You don't see him as an opponent? Like, if Joshua beats Ruiz, you don't think that it's possible that Ruiz, Joshua's next fight could be against Derek Chisora?
Are you like trying to build up your UK fan base or something? Because there's no way that you're now going to start pumping up Derek Chisora because he beat up David Price.
I'm asking you a question. I didn't say I believe anything. Like,
but your heart's not in the question. You know, you got to feel these questions.
Neither was Joette Gonzalez is, but he still showed up and fought 12 rounds.
You're trying to paint me into a corner where I gotta give some meaning of saying Chisora is a good fighter. You know,
I'm not trying to. Well, either say it or don't.
He's not. He's good for watching him beat up David Price. So if you keep giving him guys like that, that's all Chisora's. Actually, but Chisora's he can only good draw. He's only good for the only reason I like him is because he made fun of the WBSS, and I'm so glad this thing is over because I hated this tournament. I hate everything about it.
What do you hate?
It's done.
You got nothing good to say.
It's just dumb because the whole tournament set up for two guys to meet in the finals, and they pick one and they pick the other. Then they fill it full of a bunch of jabronis in there in the middle, you know. And they sort of had one fluke when Usyk jumped in at the last moment for cruiserweight.
It wasn't so a fluke. How was it a fluke that he joined the tournament? The fluke would have been if Usyk wasn't in the final.
Because they already named older guys. You know, Usyk was a late joiner. Because it was supposed to be Breedis versus Glowacki or whatever. That's who they wanted in the final. Because you look at the selection. And then Usyk jumped in and they go, oh, here's a wild card. So he met up with Breedis and beat him beforehand. You know, it's the same thing. This whole thing was set up for Taylor and Progre to meet in the end.
I agree with that. And every tournament thus far has basically wound up being the final two guys that you expect in the final. Well, except for the Bantamweight one. But obviously, there were circumstances there which have kind of led to Nonito Donaire being in the final. And he will get executed in due time by Naoya Inoue. But what if they just paid that money from the start and said, okay, well, here you go. Progre and Taylor fight. I think that would have been a better use of everyone's time.
They would have. You know, they Progre had to sue to get this fight, and then they get slapped onto a Chisora fight. It's this whole thing is nonsense. You know, and it's just terrible. I'm not going to support it anymore. It's just I'm done with it. Oh, it's all over.
You're going to watch the Bantamweight final?
What? No, I'm not going to watch a Bantamweight final. It doesn't exist. Quit lying. These fight stringers making up names now. Inoue, that's not a real name. It's not happening. There's no Bantamweight WBSS. There's no more Cruiserweight WBSS. It's over.
Don't let Chris Mannix hear you talking about this, man. He will have a tweet about, you know, how disgusting this is quick.
He can. I'll just determine just annoyed the living shit out of me. First year was all right. First year was cool because remember the selection? They had that weird music video. And then they put a lot of production into it. I was down with the first
year. You're talking about the gala? Yeah, I like the whole thing.
Yeah, but then the second year, even they didn't give a shit.
Because they didn't have any money.
Well, how much does a European music video cost? You know, come on.
Like, ask a European, I don't know.
Like $20, that's all the guy spent on the music video. At least it was entertaining. Yeah, this whole thing is a jumble, and stop it. I'm not gonna endorse this.
Listen,
look at that trophy, man. Oh my god.
What do we got to say about the trophy?
It'll look like Ali made it himself.
Oh Jesus. Oh.
I will
boy.
Say this, okay? So the WBSS, if you didn't know this, they brought in the people from the Premier League, which is Barclays League, which is in the UK. That is soccer. and it's like the NFL. And they brought these guys in to kind of design the tournament and stuff. Or sorry, not the Barclays League. It was the EUFA League. But anyway, British people, you know what I'm talking about. Help me out here. It's a soccer tournament. They brought these guys in. These guys, like, they've done a really good job with the tournament over there. And so they brought them in to kind of, like, design a lot of the aspects of the tournament and the branding and stuff. And one of the great ideas, which nobody criticizes, but they should, is the stupid lights, which they have did not use last night for good reason. Like, everyone who I've spoken to who's went to a World Boxing Super Series event says the lights are terrible. They are incredibly blinding, and when they're not pointing, like, down, they're usually blinding people in the arena, which is terrible. But nobody criticized them for wasting all that money over that.
They should be putting them with the cameras so no one can see how many people aren't there. So they should have done.
Anyway, there was an article from The Athletic where, like, they couldn't go to certain venues because they needed to have the lights.
They couldn't get the lighting truss in every venue.
And the funny thing is, like, at the end of the day, they had the final, no lights. Weird. What a waste. Anyway, on the top rank card, we had Shakur Stevenson in the main event. He fought Joette Gonzalez.
You know what, actually, can I go back? I didn't want to talk about the... No, just like a little bit about the World Boxing Super Series to stick up for it a little bit. I mean, look... If you actually
look at stand the, for it, you know. Okay, go ahead, Tom. Sorry, go ahead. Let's hear it.
No, look, I think without question they ran out of money, and I don't think anyone wants there to be another World Boxing Super Series season. I mean, it's just, you know, it's kind of jumped the shark. But as far as what we got out of it, I mean, look, Usyk fought every name that mattered at that time at cruiserweight. That's a good outcome. You know, we got a lot of clarity in that division. And, you know, 140 this time around, I think, was a good tournament. I mean, you know, I know you guys said it was set up for those guys to ultimately face each other. But, and if you really look at the detail, like, these are fighters who, you know, largely had different promoters, different managers. You know, Ivan Brancic's, representation, you know, put him in there because they thought he was going to win and it was going to be a good outcome for him. You know, it didn't work out that way, but he still got some exposure. He's back fighting on DAZN, so it's not like his career is over. You know, he still arguably boosted his profile. So, yeah, I think it's a good outcome. I mean, it's unfortunate that, you know, you had this parallel tournament happening with Maurice Hooker and Jose Ramirez, but look, still, we got a good run of fights. Ultimately, you know, Taylor comes out with the wins he got directly and indirectly, kind of, you know, inherits the wins of Progre in the tournament to some extent. So, yeah, look, I think it's cool. I think it's good all this stuff happened. You know,
I'm gonna disagree with you, Tom. There's a major flaw in what you were saying.
In the details, like, again, a lot of problems with the way the tournament was run. This was all supposed to be wrapped up over the summer, not, you know, in October. But yeah, anyway, back to what you...
Here's the problem with the tournament, and it's the problem with tournaments in general. You said that it cleared things up in a division. That is the absolute worst thing that can happen in boxing. When you have a tournament where one guy beats everybody, or any sequence of fights where a guy beats everybody, he winds up being the number one guy. Guess what? People tune out.
Yeah, okay.
They tune out, and the division becomes dead, and then you have years and years where people shit on a division like they did at heavyweight because Vladimir Klitschko and his brother, who weren't going to fight each other, beat everyone that there was. And then what do you have? Several years where people want to talk about, oh, boxing is dead, and those guys are boring, and they control the division. Look at cruiserweight now. Can people name five cruiserweights? And I'm talking about to you hardcore fans. Can you name five guys who are ranked in the top 10? No, you can't, because Usyk, he beat everybody, and then guess what? Everyone tuned out. Look, how are you dying to see, I don't know, are you dying to see the cruiserweight final? Do you know who's in the cruiserweight final? No. You care about Andrew Tabidi's next move? No.
Well, I do. And I know who's in the final, but yes, I get your... Anyway, look, I'm just going to jump in. You have to look at the value in the specifics here. You know, the division was dead, and no one had any sense of star power in the division after what Crawford division? Left. I'm talking about 140.
Okay, just making sure.
And, you know, look, I know we have different, I guess, opinions about Progre's stature, but, yeah, look, I think there is a lot of value. It's like 140 is not traditionally a big money division. Welterweight is a huge money division, and you have, you know, one pay-per-view, you know, you have a few pay-per-view fighters in the division who need opponents. So, yeah, I think there's a lot of value to the sport in getting this clarity. I get your broad point, which is if you reach the end of the tournament and there's no one else to face, then you have a problem. You know, Andre Ward beat Kovalev, and then HBO hadn't developed any other opponents for him in the division, so he retired because there was no one immediately there for him to face. But I don't think that's the case here. I think, you know, you come out of this with Taylor having a lot of options.
Jose Ramirez has accomplished more in the time of this tournament than Josh Taylor has.
I very much disagree with that.
Go look at the fights. How are you going to disagree? He fought Alex Saucedo and it did good. And then he fights Maurice Hooker, unifies the titles. Isn't that what Taylor just did? He unified a fight, except he
Jose Ramirez did not fight Alex Saucedo. Hooker
did.
Who did
he fight? Oh, no, he fought Orozco and he fought, Zepeda.
Yeah, and he looked very bad against Zepeda. And
who's a bigger star now? Jose Ramirez.
I would argue Ramirez is not a huge star. I've talked about that before.
I didn't ask you who's a huge star. I asked you who's the bigger star. I know that neither of these guys are huge stars. Come on, we both know that. We're not going to sit here.
And... Yeah, I'm not even going to. Yeah, point taken there. Neither guy has been, is in a huge drawing position.
Ultimately,
currently.
Both guys are getting fed to Crawford. Unless Taylor's people say, you know what, that's probably not the best thing for us to do to our guy.
Anyway, this is my comment, and then I'm ready to move on. When you look at the eight guys that went in the World Boxing Super Series, I think you've ended up in a much better position now with Taylor. And look, you can say he's not a huge draw now. I think he's well positioned to draw a fair amount of money in the next 2 years. You know, I think he got to the point now. I think this is a great launching pad. You know, we can agree, we can disagree, but I think everyone is ready for us to
the
move on.
The bantamweight tournament is so great that the final will be Inouye versus Donaire, and midway through the tournament, Inouye is making his next move, which is to get out of this tournament structure, get off of Dazen, and go over to Top Rank. Because if you actually have a promoter who knows what they're doing and knows how to promote, you actually can progress your career a lot faster and a lot further than a tournament could do for you. And I'm sorry if you disagree with me, but that's just the reality of the way the boxing works. There's a fine line between balancing the accomplishments you have in terms of the guys who you beat and how much money you're making in the progression of your name value as a star. So anyway, can we talk about Shakur Stevenson now? Damn, you interrupted us. I've been dying to talk about this.
Okay, let's go to Stevenson.
Fred, you still alive?
Yeah.
All right. Shakur Stevenson, he won a wipeout decision over Joette Gonzalez. And I don't know which one of you is going to bring up the Mark Kriegel stuff, but just know I'm not hearing it, all right? I'm not going to hear it. So I can't wait to hear you guys try it. But what did you learn from this fight? Shakur Stevenson, he won basically every round. I don't know what round they gave Joette. Neither do I care, but... What'd you learn from this fight?
Nothing, really. Shakur Stevenson's good and Joette Gonzalez isn't.
What about you, Tom? Yeah. Unless you got more to say, Fred.
Well, here's the thing. Shakur Stevenson was really, he showed great defense and everything. The guy couldn't touch him. But he didn't really make a lot of effort to actually punish Joette for missing him.
That's
you know, he'd hit him.
Brother. Like, come on, dude. Was he going to kill him?
You're the one who just said you were going to bring up this Kriegel shit, and then you bring it up.
Well, you bring up the fact that he's not going in there trying to finish him. Well, that's just the logical explanation to
me. I'm talking about the boxing fight, and then now you want to turn to the soap opera. It's like, Jesus.
Soap opera aside, I didn't say that he could have went in there and said, I want to punish you, like, for, you know, what you're doing to her. No, I'm just saying, like, maybe he's just like, maybe that weight on his mind, like, I don't want to really push on the gas because this is a family member. Possible, okay? I have different criticisms of this fight than you.
That dude outside the bar should have said he was a family member.
Oh my god.
No, he's great. I'm just saying, Stevenson, he could have put a little bit more.
I completely agree. I'm just waiting for a chance to
I think Stevenson's great, but this is what I said, like, when you last week when you said, is this going to make him a star? And I said, I don't think so. This isn't really a fight that makes him a star, you know? You know Shakur Stevenson's a good fighter, but this isn't the opponent that you go, oh my god, he's something else, unless you're Tim Bradley. But, you know, it's just...
please don't bring up the commentary from last night. Please
don't do that. Like I said, again, as Tom laid out last week, it's once again another vacated title, and this is what you get. You know, Shakur Stevenson didn't fight the last belt holder because that's a top-ranked guy, so they move him up, you know? So what do you get? You know? It's an achievement and everything, but... That's it. Shakur Stevenson's a good fighter. You know, obviously, he looks a lot better than Felix Verdejo or anything.
So you want to bring up failed top rank prospects? Okay.
Yeah, well, not that deep, but yeah. But this isn't the type of fighter where I thought he probably could have ended that fight, and it's just like, did it really have to go the distance? I don't think so. I think he could actually turn on the gas and ended it quick, if he could. But then you go, well, gee, now you don't know. Well, could he?
What about you, Tom?
Or could he?
Sorry. I didn't know if you were done or not.
That's my question now. So now you know he can avoid punches from a fighter who's not very good. But then is he, since Top Rank and ESPN compared him to Floyd, would Floyd have not stopped Joette Gonzalez and, you know, if they were, like, say, at the first division Floyd started on? You know? Here's a comment. I remember this. Tim Bradley said, it's tough to stop a guy. Like, you're not going to knock everyone out. Okay, well, I agree with that.
Well, certainly if you're Tim Bradley.
No, but they made the comment that, especially when you got 2 years more experience than him, because I guess as Joette's got 2 more years of pro experience. Well, Floyd Mayweather, who they brought up in comparison there, when he fought for his title, was against Genaro Hernandez, who had 11 more years of experience, and Floyd stopped his ass. You know, like, when you're in your first division and you're this highly rated of a prospect, a guy like this, Shakur, should have walked right through him. So this fight, like I said, that's it. My peers, I think Shakur is very talented, but this wasn't a fight where I go, oh my god, look how amazing he is, because Joette just sat there and got murked a bit, and that's it.
Tom, you said you had a similar take?
Yeah, I'm chomping at the bit to jump in here. Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, first off, I just, as Fred said, I mean, there's a bunch of stuff surrounding this fight I just flushed down the toilet. Like, when people are talking about the significance of it being a title fight or how few fights to a title fight, look, again, it's like, this is a fight which under other circumstances would have been on a show box, would have been on an undercard to another fight. And you say, okay, it's a development fight. Stevenson showed good defense.
We do development fights and their world title fights. Cool. Good to know.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's like, it was a vacant WBO title belt. I think we, you know, really comprehensively have covered that in recent podcasts. I mean, it was, you know, the WBO featherweight title has been in Top Rank's care for more than 10 years, and they're usually passed through vacant titles. You know, this was BoxRec had coming in. I know you guys love to clown the BoxRec stuff, but it was like, I think Stevenson was ranked something like number 15, and Joe Gonzalez was something like 22. And it's like, yeah, this felt like number 15 against number 22, you know. So take that for what it's worth.
Chris Eubank Jr., like 16 pound for pound.
Well,
you know that?
Yeah, again, it's easy to clown the, but anyway, the point is, just using it as a point of comparison to give context to this. It's like, this was not, you know, when you say world title fight, like, Stevenson did not deserve to challenge for a title in this fight, and Gonzalez definitely didn't. You know, it's like, you know, to Fred's point, you see prospect versus prospect fights, you know, and that's the thing. Like when you were saying about Progre, is he just on the junk heap now? It's like, look, earlier in his career in 2017, he fought Joel Diaz Jr. Diaz coming in potentially was a little bit of a favorite. He was also a prospect, and Progre just walked through him, knocked him out in two rounds. You know, this was just like, I saw so little from Stevenson. I mean, to me, you know, for people to start talking about he's a great fighter, this is a show of greatness, future pound for pounder, it's like, look what happened here, okay? It was, I'd say, an A defensive performance against, you know, a C fighter, if you're starting to try to talk about him on the world-class stage. Again, it's like, if you're talking about a 21-year-old prospect, fine, but if you're talking about him on pound-for-pound lists, you have to compare him to other fighters. He only landed 121 punches in the whole fight. I mean, it was a B-minus at best offensive performance. I mean, just what was he doing in there? You know, when Gonzalez would get in close, he wouldn't match him. He would tie him up or move him to the side. I mean, if Gonzalez took one step forward, he'd take two steps back, and that's fine. But, you know, it's like, what was he doing here? You know, he wasn't in there with Leo Santa Cruz. He wasn't in there with the best fighter in the division. You know, it was just such a minimal performance to me. I mean, that's something we always talk about. We've talked about a lot of prospects. And, you know, you always say, it's like, how do you judge if a prospect's good? By beating someone who is good themselves, or by trying to, you know, extrapolate from a performance what that will mean against higher levels of competition. And to me, Gonzalez was not great. And what Stevenson did was a very incomplete performance. You know, just to close, so it's not like I'm totally ripping him to shreds. It's like, he is very young and he has a lot of room to develop. But to me, this was a very incomplete performance.
Well, I can't agree with that. I think that that's a poor take on both of your parts. The only thing that I agree with was the fact that there wasn't really much to learn from this fight. And, you know, they got a fight where they got a built-in storyline, and that's cool. But, like, to me, I look at this fight, I'm like, this is some of the best matchmaking I've seen Top Rank do, like, in years. This was excellent. And Jouette's
theoretically, it was the WBO who decided this.
Yeah, well, I don't care what you just said, because I know Top Rank made this fight. Jouette's a tough fighter. Like, we're not going to take that away from him. Like, the dude, like, he, like, his corner could have stopped him and said, like, hey, you are doing nothing here. Nothing. There's no point for this to continue, because every round looks exactly the same. But they went in there. They stuck it out. They went for 12 rounds. But the thing is, Jouette is more the story here than it was Shakur. Shakur did what he was supposed to. It's like, his style is not going to be a walk guys down. He's mostly a defensive fighter that does not have power. And I'm sorry if you think that because you've seen Shakur Stevenson stop a few guys on some top rank cards that he's a guy with power. He's not. The guy does. He just does. He's not gonna. When they put him in there in his first pro fight and you saw he couldn't knock that guy out who was there for Stevenson to get a knockout, it's clear, it's like, oh, Stevenson doesn't really sit down on his punches. Now, everything else is very, like, the dude is very talented in every other aspect, but that's just not him. And he's not going to be that, and that's how he's going to get in trouble, is if he starts to think he's someone who he isn't. Look, think of Oscar Valdez on his HBO debut, where he looked pedestrian because he thought he could walk down a tough guy who stood his ground and wound up marking Valdez up. So Stevenson looked spectacular for what he does. And he, like, I really do think that. But Top Rank, they have a very, very specific way that they match make. And a lot of Top Rank guys have spent their whole career in that ecosystem where they are matched with guys that are similar to Jouette. Because those kind of guys make Stevenson, they make Lomachenko, they make all these guys look amazing. And so, to me, as long as Stevenson keeps facing the rogues gallery of top rank opponents, like, this guy's going to be on a pound-for-pound list. And I don't take anything away from Stevenson from what I saw last night. Would I have liked to see him get the stoppage? Yeah, but I don't think it was going to happen. You also got to consider that Gonzalez was just not willing to let Stevenson hurt him. He wasn't going to get hurt in that fight. It wasn't the prettiest fight to watch. Again, if you missed the fight, watch the first round, then just in your mind, play out that first round 12 times. That's the whole fight. But I think it's still too early to have any strong feelings about Stevenson, especially looking at this fight. Stevenson did exactly what he was supposed to do. He's just not.
I think you only watched the first round and then you didn't care about this fight.
Gonzalez was there. That's exactly what I do.
Gonzalez was there the whole fight to be hit. You know, it wasn't like Gonzalez was running away. He was right there in front of Stevenson, and Shakur just wanted to show how slick he was on defense. He could have easily. Yeah, but his style could have been actually doing something, you know? That's what I'm saying. Like, you're sort of congratulating
him. He doesn't have it in him. Watch what Stevenson...
Yeah, but I don't care. You're supposed to find it, you know? If you got Tim Bradley blowing smoke up your ass, then at least step to it.
But that's the company line.
I've seen Shakur Stevenson knock dudes out.
Okay. You've also seen Molinaji knock guys out.
You know, might have been on a street corner. But I seen him go ham. And I'm saying Joette Gonzalez wasn't offering up any more opposition than some dude outside that bar.
Here's how I know I'm right. Go watch any round of that fact.
You're just congratulating Top Rank for doing what Top Rank always does, and I don't think that's what we should take away from this fight.
I'm telling you just specifically from Stevenson's character.
You're trying to get on the VIP fight row. If I see your name on that VIP row from the Top Rank PR guy, I'm going to know what this whole thing's up with. You know,
look,
that's what I'm going to see. I'm going to see your name.
Watch the fight. And when Stevenson slips a punch, look at the smile on his face. That's all he cares about. That's what he wants to do. He's a mark for himself. He wants to be that slick guy. He's fighting to impress Andre Ward.
I know that's what he wants to do, but I'm saying about the fight, I'm going, I wasn't there. He's like, you know, he's a good fighter, but this fight told you nothing. That's my only really point. It's like he could have done something, though. It's sort of like when Rigondeaux, when people would, you know, congratulate him for being so fragile when he wouldn't take a chance against guys that he should have been able to hit. If you're supposed to be a great boxer, an opponent like this, you should be able to find a way to at least hit, you know, with some bad.
You really need to put some respect on Rigondeaux's name. That is one of the most exciting fighters in boxing at the moment.
Now, because he's the PBC. Now he's got the fire.
You guys are too much.
Now he's a toe-to-toe warrior. So now you can fight. And I don't know, maybe Shakur Stevenson, he just likes, you know, whatever off money. He's got the Jay Prince probably taking 50% of his money. So now he doesn't want to get hurt.
What percent? If Jay Prince is taking 50, then what's, never mind. We are definitely going to get some guys with baseball bats.
I just want to back up Fred here quickly to, the notion that you and your friend Tim Bradley are saying that, you know, he wasn't going to get stopped. Some people are just trying to survive. Look, Fred's totally right. Gonzalez was there in front of him all night. If at any point Stevenson had wanted to take a forward step, you know, try to build off of those lefts he was landing to the stomach. He was always moving back. And when he landed the left to the stomach, it was just a stay off me punch. You know, he could have tried to land more than 10 punches per round. Like, there's a lot more that a prospect can do when they're trying to, you know, convince the public that they're good and talented.
Why didn't Floyd stop Berto? He was right there. Floyd
is old as hell.
Okay. Yeah, it was a completely different stage of his career. If this is supposed to be, you know, the absolute physical prime of Stevenson in his first weight class,
he's like 22 years old.
Anyway, I don't think it's it's just nonsense to say he couldn't stop him or Gonzalez was trying to survive. He was there to be hit. Stevenson wasn't interested. What happened when Gonzalez came in? Stevenson tied him up repeatedly.
Stevenson is modeling himself after Andre Ward and Floyd Mayweather, and unfortunately,
Year old Floyd Mayweather.
Yes. He's 22 years old. He didn't see the young Floyd. Come on now, you guys, use your brain.
Here was the graphic. Here was the graphic. They were comparing Shakur Stevenson from Floyd Mayweather bouts 9 through 13. Floyd knocked all those dudes out, 9 to 13.
Yeah. And
or whatever, maybe it was 13
Stevenson
to 17.
Has probably don't ruin never my joke. Seen I don't one care. Of those Floyd Mayweather fights.
Yeah, but look, this is it.
I watched Robert fighter, Guerrero versus Mayweather and said, oh, this is 13. How you're supposed to fight.
Yeah. Yeah, Floyd stopped all those dudes 9 to 13. Yeah.
And he's just trying to prove to Andre Ward that, hey, when I was your age and they put me in with a guy who wasn't that good, I didn't get dropped like you did.
This is one of your worst takes ever.
You know? Yeah, I mean, this I mean, is that's absolutely a joke, but
are you got an angle on Jouette's sister? Is this why you're trying to?
Yeah, look,
I don't want to meet like Stevenson in a gas station, so I'm going to keep quiet.
So Floyd didn't stop Berto, so that means every time a fighter hasn't stopped another fighter, that is comparable to an all-time. I mean, it's just
no,
so
you
ridiculous.
You're like misrepresenting what I'm saying. Okay, what I'm saying is
better?
Shakur Stevenson is
you're just saying the top rank knows
better if
how to get
him
a guy
out in
belt.
Two rounds.
I'm not disagreeing with that. You guys
were 12 round distance.
You guys are it's applying you're applying your expectation here. But here's the thing: I can see what Stevenson is trying to do, and while I disagree and I agree with you guys, he probably should have stopped Joette Gonzalez. I don't think he ever intended to. Like, it just, he didn't look like a guy who was there to turn the gas on and stop him. Like, that doesn't seem like he either has that mentality or he trusts himself to do that. Like, it's not happening.
Yeah, but this is the thing. Like, well, one, Tom, we know, hates Shakur Stevenson. So I'm a little leery of being on his side on this.
I came a long way trying to bury the hatchet with Stevenson on this one. I've been
I appreciate
you like Joette Gonzalez and his family are struggling with that, aren't you?
Oh, God. Yeah, we need to talk about that, you know, before we move on, too. No. But, yeah, back to you, Fred.
I'm just saying, if they want me to watch another Shakur Stevenson fight, and it's going to be for like another vacated title. Like if he goes to 130 and it's for another vacated title, I'm not going to give a shit about it if this is the kind of performance he's putting on.
Fred, you know? Do you think the reason that Tom doesn't like Shakur Stevenson is the same reason Joette Gonzalez or Joette Gonzalez's family doesn't like him?
Hey, don't drag
me. No, not at all. No.
Come on.
We like to joke about Tom, but that's not even the same thing. Tom just hates him because I think he likes laughing, seeing guys cry. So, that's why it's his favorite clip. So.
Anyway, moving. Yeah,
what can I say? I just don't respect him as a man anymore after watching him cry in front of Chris Mannix.
I really would have liked to have seen Shakur fight Valdez. As Valdez vacated the title, right?
I mean, yeah, how do you think that fight goes? I think it's an interesting fight. And I think they're really similar in the sense that there are two guys that are very fast. They've got some skills, but they don't have a lot of power.
Yeah, but it's not like I'm a big Valdez fan or anything, but it was like he had the belt, so I would have liked to seen them. But I know this is what Top Rank does. Maybe they're now really scared since, you know, they tried it with Lomachenko to go after Salido and he ends up losing. So it's like, yeah, we're just going to vacate from now on, you know? So it's just, there's too much vacating of the titles and that just bugged me. So, you know, so it's like, yeah, so either beat up the Gonzalez's of the world or fight the champions, you know? So that's it.
Yeah. Yeah. Look, I'm just going to say my final piece before I move on about this. I think the point that we're trying to make is very clear. It's like there are spectrums to success. You give a scorecard. You know, it's like it always drove me nuts when people like seemingly rewarded Crawford when he was coming up because he'd like lose the first like 2 to 4 rounds and then take over a fight after that. It's like, if you're fighting a guy like Hank Lundy or Gamboa at that stage of his career against a significantly bigger Crawford, like it's not like better that, you know, it's like good. Okay. You lose the first 4 rounds and then you take over the fight because you figure the opponent out. You know, it's better. Like you don't lose those first 4 rounds. And like, same thing here. It's like, this isn't rocket science. It's like, I'm just saying when you have that much of an overmatched opponent, why is Stevenson landing 10 punches around? You know, it's just there's a spectrum of success. I think, you know, for the lofty language that's being thrown around, I really just didn't see anything in this fight that warrants that. It was more about what Gonzalez didn't do than anything Stevenson did.
I don't know how Terrence Crawford got brought up into this, but okay. we can move on.
Oh, it's just another failure in logic. It's, you know, rewarding someone for, you know, an imperfect performance. It's like, I don't see why people are saying this is a master class because he won, you know, 10 or 11 rounds against Joey Gonzalez. I would have been a lot more impressed if he had 12 stopped
rounds. That is a master class. When you win every single round, that's a master class.
Are we relitigating this against a shitty opponent? No, stop him. If it's a bad opponent, stop him.
Tom, it doesn't work that way. Lomachenko doesn't stop every guy he fights, and he still puts on masterclasses.
But he's trying.
Oh my God,
Spence,
are you gonna go to Joey Gonzalez's next fight? No, because no one gives a shit about him.
It does not matter. Like you can fight Tom a tough guy and still have a masterclass and not stop him. You sound like Manas right here.
Again, but this wasn't a masterclass. This was a guy who kept getting hit by the same left hand.
Did Terrence Crawford turn in a masterclass against Victor Postol?
No.
Oh, okay. Dropped him 3 times, won every round, basically. Not a masterclass. Great. Where do we now rank Stevenson? Like, if we
one second. How many times have you rewatched Crawford Postol? Is anyone making gifts from that fight? No. Like, please, come on.
3 knockdowns. Funny. Where do we rank Stevenson among fighters below 135? I don't think it's fair to really compare him to the guys above 135. What are we ranking him?
Go ahead, he's Fred. A promising prospect. There's not much more to say than that. Who is gifted a vacant belt.
I'm not ranking him.
You're not going to rank him?
You know, he's good, but what am I going to say? He's better than someone else? He's better than anyone that lost to Joey Gonzalez.
You think he's better than Emmanuel Navarrete?
Yeah, sure, of course.
You think he's better than
Inouye? I know these guys are. Oh, of course he's better than Inouye.
Ooh. You know, Mike Coppinger ranks Inouye pound for pound number one.
Well, you know neither one of those gives a shit where Mike Coppinger ranks fighters.
Would you take Gary Russell Jr. over Shakur Stevenson?
Yes.
Tom?
No.
Or, sorry, not Tom. Fred?
No, because, you know, Shakur Stevenson might fight more than once every 18 months. And also because Gary Russell Jr., like, he's short and he's got small arms. Shakur Stevenson's at least got some height to him.
What about Josh Warrington? Because that seems, and we got to, you know, put that in quotation marks, seems like what they're doing, because they talked on the broadcast about how Josh Warrington now is their Top Rank's going to negotiate with Josh Warrington to make the fight between him and Shakur Stevenson, the unification. Josh Warrington, of course, with Frank Warren. Frank Warren has a deal with Top Rank and ESPN. So should they make the fight between Josh Warrington and Shakur Stevenson? Who are you guys taking? How do you see it playing out?
Go ahead, Tom.
I don't have a strong pick, and I know that's a cop-out answer, but I'll just continue to say I haven't really seen enough of Shakur Stevenson at a high level. I mean, Warrington's shown a lot of weakness, but he just has proven so much more to me beating Carl Frampton and Lee Selby, by the way.
Fred?
To be honest, I couldn't pick Josh Warrington out of a police lineup of 2 people.
Do you at least know the difference between him and Carl Frampton?
Yeah, Carl Frampton lost to him because he kind of sort of fell off a cliff there.
You know, Josh,
and that's nothing to do with Josh Warrington. I don't know who the dude is. I recognize the name, but I can't recall if I've ever watched one of his fights.
I'm fairly confident you've watched the Josh Warrington fight.
Yeah, he's no Ted Cheeseman.
He's not Ted's a Ted Cheeseman. He's definitely not a blonde. I'd take Shakur Stevenson over Josh Warrington. I think Josh Warrington is a guy ripe for the picking right now. He's looked pretty pedestrian for a couple of fights. He had the great start against Carl Frampton, but Frampton still like gave him some stuff to think about. And I think at this point it's pretty fair to say Frampton, as much as it pains me to say, Frampton is, he's kind of done. Kid Galahad had success against Frampton. Frampton, you know, he beat Lee Selby, but it was still a relatively competitive fight. I've never thought highly of Josh Warrington in terms of his like being a top talent. And I think a lot of his success is because he has like the activity. And I think that would play into a fight with Stevenson where he'd get countered. And I feel like there, oh God, I don't really want to say this, but I feel like Josh Warrington's been promoted a particular way and never faced certain styles. And that style being Shakur Stevenson's, the one that he employs. And I think Warrington would look clueless against Shakur Stevenson. Tom, I know you're not a big fan of Shakur Stevenson, so you got a rebuttal?
Look, that might happen. I just feel like I really haven't learned enough about Shakur Stevenson. Look, I always err on the side of with a prospect not really knowing how good, you know, it's like I really just try to be measured with what I am learning from a given fight. I mean, I think we learned from this fight that Stevenson doesn't have world-class power at this point in his career, you know, and I think there are a lot of things we didn't learn. Well,
boy over here with 24 fights and one knockout at one point in his career.
Look, I've certainly done my own like, I'm not going to sit here and be in a position to defend Josh Warrington. I've clowned on him plenty over the course of my career. But look, I said the same thing about Teofimo Lopez during his rise. It's like when he's knocking out Diego Magdaleno, it's like, okay, we've seen Diego Magdaleno get, you know, knocked out much faster by Terry Flanagan, who was noted as a feather-fisted puncher at the world level. So it's like, okay, that probably means it's more of an issue of Diego Magdaleno having no chin than Teofimo Lopez being that strong of a puncher. You know, it's like, it's just, that's how I evaluate prospects. I really just try to consider, you know, what are we learning when they're not fighting to high level opponents yet? What are we learning from these fights?
Let me ask you.
And I just feel like I haven't learned that much about Shakur Stevenson yet. You know, no, just to go back, I mean, the Christopher Diaz fight, which was his other step up fight, looked exactly the same as this. I mean, he could not bring anything different than Joe Gonzalez. You know, two very similar fighters. They played out the same way. Stevenson was I just had watched that fight on Saturday morning. Stevenson was just content to walk backwards and land the left to the body over shorter, slower opponents. You know, I'm not learning that much from that.
So I agree. Shakur Stevenson, not a power puncher. But I want to ask you this question. Who at featherweight does have world-class power?
I think Gary Russell Jr. is a much harder puncher. Look, I am pretty done talking about this fight. I mean, this is the same thing that happened with the Teofimo Lopez discussions over and over again. It's like, all I'm saying is I feel like there are things that I've learned and haven't learned. And look, I don't want to throw out Stevenson's future. Look, he has great potential. He's still very young. I always try to couch that. The people who are saying that he's, you know, this is the first step on his road to greatness, I'm like, no, he's, you know, this fight really just doesn't mean that to me. You know, I'll still be interested. I think more so than Fred. I mean, Fred, I think was well, calling Fred it boring. It's like, care. Yeah, right. I think it's more apathy than, you know, any negative feelings even. Like, I will be interested in watching Stevenson's continued fights. If he fights Warrington, great, I'll watch that. But if he's going to fight, you know, another F-rated top-rank opponent like he did in his last fight to try to trick people into thinking he's a power puncher, it's like, I don't really care about that much. That doesn't mean that much. But yeah, if he's fighting higher-level opponents, I will definitely be interested to see what he can do.
I just want to say, for a listener, that this is not the same thing as Teofimo Lopez. Teofimo Lopez looks like he's actually not capable of being great at any aspect of his game, where Shakur Stevenson, at a minimum, is showing that he is going to have great defense. Okay? So Teofimo bailed out a lot by the fact that he's got some pretty spectacular knockouts on the highlight reel. Stevenson's actually showing that he's got some pretty damn sublime skill. Doesn't have the power, though. But if you could trade, or, you know, if you're looking at which is more important in a fighter's success, you would take the sublime skills over the power. That seems to take you further in your career in terms of being a world champion and stuff.
I just don't see how you think of Joet Gonzalez. I mean, where do you rank his offensive output to say
I don't see how that is actually relevant. I'm making a distinction between Teofimo's struggles and then what you classify as an offensive struggle from Shakur Stevenson in this fight. Like, Teofimo, and you're the one who's beat this drum, you're driving this bus, Teofimo has, at this point, looked very, very underwhelming to the point where I may even consider saying Robert Easter Jr. might be the better fighter. I'm not willing to go that far yet, but...
the most heated topic of discussion on the podcast.
Yeah, well, wait till we get into that fight, because I got something for you.
Yeah, oh boy, we've taken way too... You know, I have more to say about this. I'm not going to say it. We need to keep it moving.
Good, and we could talk about the whole drama, but with, you know, Yahaira and all that stuff, but, like, who wants to really comment on teen drama? And I think they, like, met each other as teenagers and been together, like, since that long, so...
Yeah, actually, you know what? Really I do want to talk about that point for, like, this. 15... Oh, you go first, and then I'll... But no, I don't think
that's important, because I actually think that the comments about Shakur Stevenson being upset with the promotion of the fight is far more important.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I want to talk about also. Okay. But anyway, you go first.
Okay, well, don't say you want to talk about this after I mentioned the family drama. That's not what I was talking about. And nor do I want to talk about that. So anyway, do you think that there's anything to read into here? It sounds like there's something you're reading into.
Oh, well, okay. First, I'm going to sidestep the elephant in the room, which I think isn't what you want me to do. But look, all I want to say is just to defend Stevenson. Like, this was
the guy who
pretty...
said F you to the crowd. You're going to defend him? Okay, let's hear this.
Oh.
Look, I think Stevenson was put in a pretty thankless, or, you know, kind of a no-win situation by Gonzalez's family behaving so classlessly all through the promotion. I think Stevenson said exactly what he needed to say afterwards. You know, it was all business. We're just going to fight. You know, I'm extending a hand if you want to take it. I think Stevenson showed a lot of class in the situation. So I just want to give him credit for that.
He literally said F you to the crowd after the fight. Which
I don't remember that.
Dude, go back and watch it. I don't have any problem with it, by the way. I think Stevenson should have done that because, look, it goes along with what you're saying. It's like, oh, you know, they don't want to give him respect. They want to boo him. Oh, well, F you then. And that helps him to grow.
I was referring specifically to the family trauma, but that's amazing I missed that. Yeah, I will have to go check that out because I watched the post-fight. Somehow I missed that little bit. Anyway.
Anyway, he could have been saying something else, but I'm pretty sure that's what he was saying. So there was this comment about Shakur Stevenson being being upset about the promotion of the fight, which that would fall on Top Rank and ESPN. So do you think that there's anything to read into here? Fred, did you see these comments?
I didn't see the comments, but I don't know. I could sort of imagine what did he say?
I don't actually know specifically what he said, but
nice one.
Because I don't think that there's anything to read into
here. The producers are really dropping the ball here.
Yeah, oh my God.
No, Steve. I looked at this and I said, this is stupid because here's the thing.
Oh, the only thing, okay, the only thing is, I remember like they were trying to call him fearless or something. That's the only thing I saw. I didn't see anything about the family drama, but I could see that. Whatever, if he made comments, because he's just sort of like, it's like gossip, you know?
Yeah.
And if you got to deal with gossip, it's like you want to get away from it. And then everyone, they're making your gossip part of the selling point. It's just like, fuck out of here, you know? He's got to go. Mark Kriegel wants him to, I don't know, Kriegel probably had visions of holding an intervention or something between the family.
Oh my God. Mark Kriegel facilitated the reuniting of the Gonzalez family.
You know he's pitching that
public
right
acceptance
now.
Of
you owe me money if you pitch that successfully there, Mark.
Anyway, I don't think that there's anything to read into because I think where people go is like, oh, he's upset with Top Rank. He's going to join PBC. He's going to join DAZN, blah, 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 blah. It's not happening. There's no way that happens.
I think it's, you know, he's just like, hey, guys, this is fucking stupid.
I think Shakur Stevenson is just a shooter. I think he does not hold back. And even if Stevenson was like, nah, I'm done with these guys. Like, I don't like the way, you know, he could say, I don't like the way they use my personal situation to promote a fight or whatever, blah, blah, blah. I still think that Stevenson, first of all, is locked up long term. But second of all, I think you look at his career is being guided by Jay Prince, who's had trouble with Floyd Mayweather in the past, and also Andre Ward, who's got that sweet job with ESPN. One of his mentors, as they, you know, they bigged up, was Terrence Crawford. You know, Stevenson fights to impress those guys, and I think he trusts those guys. And as long as that they stay over there with ESPN, that's where he's going to stay comfy. And Rollins had a really good tweet about this, so I'm just going to read that so we can move on from this. Final thought of the night for how relentlessly Top Rank milked the shit out of the Yahaira angle for this fight. They better at least offer to promote her if and when she decides to try and turn pro. I don't like the try part. I think she's a good amateur, and she doesn't have to try to turn pro. I think she can turn pro, and she'd be a great fighter, Rollins. But other than that, is really poignant, well said. I like what you tweeted there. Let's move on to Joshua Greer, because I know...
Just as a following thing, like I said, I'll make it quicker than Tom because I won't defend anything. Like the whole Paulie Malignaggi, Adrian Broner side piece conversation.
Yes.
You know, while the lady involved might not want to be involved with it, those two guys made it an issue. So when they make it an issue, you can sort of reference it, you know. But this thing, it's like these guys didn't really want this to be the selling point. It's just like, Shakur wasn't happy. So it's a minor thing. Fucking, I don't care. I never cared about it in the buildup. I think it's dumb. You know, if it would have been a side piece thing, then it would have been kind of funny. So, but you know, otherwise, no interest. Move on. Let's go to night there.
Yeah. Joshua Greer won a decision against Antonio Nieves. Tom, how good did Josh Greer look to you?
I'm just not impressed with Josh Greer overall. The only thing I have to say about this is, like, I don't think anyone cares about Josh Greer. I think he's just on these broadcasts because Top Rank needs to have another belt as their way of getting paid by ESPN. So, yeah, not impressed.
But you, Fred, you seem like you disagree with Tom.
I don't know. I think Tom's got an angle on some PBC money the way he keeps shitting on Top Rank.
Kobe Bean sent him that envelope of money.
Yeah, I think so.
Well, I'm going to give a little bit more. Antonio Nieves.
Do you feel, Tom, is PBC paying off in your opinion?
PBC is definitely paying off.
But is it okay, correct?
Just very quick, yeah. Antonio Nieves, like, he's the guy who, in a way, just clowned, who landed the same left hook to the body.
I was at that fight.
Over and
I don't know. I don't like this take you're going with, Tom, but go on.
No, I just don't think he's a good fighter. Like, he had previously lost on a showbox before that. Like, I've seen him fight a number of times, and I just, like, have felt he's not a good fighter. So it's not a great sign when Greer's going... You know, not quite life and death, but way too competitive with this guy. It's just continuing to show that Greer is a very marginal fighter. You know, Greer looked very bad in his fight prior to that with Patapov.
Yep.
So I just, you know, that was the fight where famously all the Top Rank people were buzzing around audibly saying, I don't think this is a robbery. It was just a close fight, you know. And now we get Josh Greer in another underwhelming fight. I mean, it's just, if he's having this competitive of fights with this level of opponent, it just means to me he's not a fighter worth paying attention to.
Tom, you know that our boy Joshua Greer lost to PBC prospect Stephen Fulton, right?
Yeah, he lost to him.
Yeah, I just wanted to, I'm surprised you didn't throw that out there. Trying to pull
well, I mean,
Stephen
it's a good win for Fulton. I like Fulton.
So, is it a good win if you don't think Joshua Greer is very good?
Ooh, Tom.
Well, I mean,
cornered.
There's a big difference. It's what is Greer's value as an A side? You know, it's the same thing we were talking about with Progre. It's like Progre, I think, is a very serviceable B side going forward between 140 and 147, but that doesn't mean he's a future star.
I love that you brought up Progre because that's literally my take about this fight. Is like, I think Greer, who is, you know, he's 25 years old, so he's still a young guy. But, like, I kind of put him in the same category that Progre is in, where, like, they're fringe guys. They clearly have some talent, but, like, they have no major push, and they've never received one, and possibly it's for a reason. And, like, both guys, it's really unfortunate because I think both Greer and Progre, in their own way, have a lot of charisma. They've got great gimmicks. Like, if they were just a little bit better, they could be guys you could build around. Like, Top Rank could build around Joshua Greer if he just had, I don't know, knockout power or something, but he doesn't. And, like, that, it, you know, it sucks, but, like, not everyone gets to be an elite guy. And, like, Top Rank's recently had some trouble because they keep trying to push a guy like Joshua Greer, and it's blowing up in their face when they get beat, or they, in Greer's case, get in these situations where they really underwhelm in fights where possibly they should have lost. Now, Top Rank isn't dumb. One of the things that's pretty smart that they do is if their guy gets into a situation like this, they just kind of run with it. And so that's how you have a guy like Emmanuel Navarrete, who's now, you know, one of Top Rank's building stars, or at least a guy they're trying to build into a star. And it's like, yeah, that's smart. They lucked into that. Dogbe was supposed to be the guy. He wasn't. Okay, well, it's Navarrete, and it always works when you're a smart promoter and you know how to get options on guys. But, yeah, Antonio Neves, I thought he was a guy in that Inoue fight where he, like, I didn't think Inoue looked good at all in that fight. I was so hyped for Inoue to fight, you know, his first fight in America. I was there, and I'm watching that fight, and I'm like, wow, Inoue is just really just underwhelming here. And I think if you watch the HBO commentary, they were trying to put him over, but they were bored watching that fight. And a lot of that had to do with Neves saying, I'm going to fight on the outside and just not get hurt. So, like, I think Neves is a competent fighter. I know he's lost, but being a good and a great fighter is different from being a competent guy. A competent guy can go in there, you know, Gallimore was even competent, but obviously he's not going to beat a top guy or a guy that's, you know, a contender level. And that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. You still make for good B-sides. Adrian Granados is like, I don't know what we would call Adrian Granados, but whatever. Anyway, Joshua Greer, yeah, that's, we'll end it there with him. Erickson Lubin also fought. He fought Nathaniel Gallimore. Lubin won a decision. So the question is, and this is the question with Lubin, you know, he lost to Jermell Charlo, got knocked out. He's been rebuilding for several fights now, I think four now. So, Fred, to you, does it look like Erickson Lubin has recovered his momentum that he had before the Charlo fight?
No, because his momentum was a lot of overhype. So he's not to that level.
Interesting take. You think he's overhyped? He was overhyped?
Well, yeah, before that, because they like you said, they threw him. It's like I said on the ball. They threw him way in way too early with Charlo, you know. And even his trainer now says that he says that they pushed him too fast, you know. So I think he's recovering still. He had some nice. He looked really nice in moments. You know, it was a good fight, good opponent. But if you're saying, can he challenge the guys to have a belt now? I don't think so. But I think he's they're rebuilding him, at least, you know. He's making a little bit smarter decisions and everything, it seems to be. Like I said, he has some really nice left-hand shots that he was throwing around there.
What about you, Tom? Do you think he's regained his momentum?
Yeah, I'll actually take off what Fred was saying when you said Lubin was overhyped before. Yeah, I was definitely on the Lubin hype train for sure. I mean, I really bought into the whole story that he was the best you at the time when he turned pro, even though he was super young. It just seemed like on paper, everything you want out of a prospect. You know, in hindsight, it's very easy to say the Jermell Charlo fight was way too much too soon. But yeah, look, I really like the performance. I thought Lubin showed some great offense. I actually did still see a hint of tentativeness, which I don't think is the worst thing. I think, you know, prior to the Jermall Charlo fight, he was way overconfident, you know, or else he, you know, wouldn't have taken that fight. He really hadn't been challenged going into that point, and I think fighters need to be humbled sometimes. So, I think not the worst thing. I think it was a very effective version of Lubin. And he was originally supposed to fight Terrell Gaucher, 2012 Olympian. I definitely still would not mind seeing that fight. I think I actually still would like to see that fight before he challenges one of the titleists. But I think he's right there. I think he's back pretty close to contender level, if not directly ready to go for a championship fight next time out. I mean, J-Rock needs an opponent next year. Heard recent titleist Jermell Harrison winner are going to need fights next year. Also have Brian Castano fighting this weekend. So, I mean, there's a lot of activity at 154 in the PBC division. And I would, you know, definitely either be cool with one more fight at this level or going, you know, right up to the top.
Well, I mean, I think he's recovered his momentum. I think at this point, if he fought a world champion at 154, it would be a good fight for that guy, whether it be Munguia, Williams. Any of those fights would be, like, Lubin would be a highly respectable opponent. But I think the thing that really shook Lubin's career up was that we used to view him as like a future top guy in the sport. I mean, he was poached as the top U.S. amateur. There was a ton of hype around his career. He looked like he was progressing fast. He was strong. He could box everything. And I think the real thing that we've discovered now is like his ceiling is completely shattered. Like the ceiling for Shakur Stevenson, who we were talking about earlier, like that's a future pound for pound talent. And until otherwise, you have to assume that with him. I mean, he looks like he's got most of the ingredients you need for that. Well, with Lubin, we've gone away from that. And now when we're looking at Lubin, it's like, well, can he actually be a world champion? And I think like the answer is almost always yes when that question gets asked, because it's not that difficult to find a title. Ask Shakur Stevenson, ask Devin Haney. But like, I don't know. It just seems like that's the real impact from the loss of Jermell Charlo, is his ceiling has been completely shattered. Fred, do you have anything to say about the fact that Erickson Lubin is a snack fighter?
No, I don't have anything to say about it. I'm just saying, you know, that I never got, this is why I said he was overhyped. Because people are like, oh yeah, Charlo, he's going to get in there. Just like when J-Rock's like, Charlo's going to get in there. It's like, no, man. No, Charlo's are going to take him out. That's how I felt. So that's why I feel he was overhyped. And I say they're doing now that they're sort of, his new trainers there, they sort of got a bit more realistic view on him. He could be a good fighter, but I'd say, like you sort of said that. Is his ceiling shattered? I don't know, but he's got a very difficult road ahead of him with the guys who are holding belts right now.
Well, he might be the same guy, you know? He was very young when that happened. He could still be the same guy. But, like, the thing is, the same way with Julian Williams, how Julian Williams went from being one of the top prospects in boxing to just a guy who was just a guy at 154, and people started to sleep on the fact that he was, a legitimate, like, prospect. And it's possible that the same thing is happening with Lubin, where it's like, hey, he's still really good. He got caught. And with Charlo, he did legitimately get caught. It's not like Charlo was outboxing him. We saw, you know, what, 90 seconds of the fight, and then it was over? And Charlo or Lubin wasn't given a shot to really get up and recover. So
not snack shit's not even spilt right. That's why, man. Lions only. Come on. Let's go.
Are you? I expect that from Tom.
No. The Tom's too scared to start repping Lions only. Come on. No, but this
I actually have two Lions only t-shirts for what it's worth.
Yeah, but do you have a Lions Den boxing t-shirt?
Yeah, Tom.
No, I do not have the LDBC merch.
See, okay, so I'd put Lubin at the Jaime Manguilla's level.
They called him Jamie on the podcast.
Yeah, I know. That's
or on the broadcast. Someone did.
Yeah,
they Morrow did. Morrow called him Jamie. It's like, wow, have you been watching boxing for the last 2 years?
Hey, Morrow got in a Kevin Gates reference, and then when Adrian Broner flipped off the camera, he said gang. I was like, you know what? Morrow, you said some stupid stuff tonight, but you're good in my book tonight.
But then he also went gang, Al Bernstein.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He said gang, Al Bernstein, and Al just kind of laughed it off. But we all know what he was talking about.
Yeah. So I don't know. Lubin's up there. But again, I don't think he's like, I don't know. I'll have to see a bit more out of him to think that he can take Charlo out anyway.
All right. Let's keep it moving here real quick on Robert Easter Jr. and Adrian Granados. Can you remember a fighter who had literally the worst fight of possibly the decade? And then also was in one of the great action fights of the year. Like, has that ever happened? Or has Robert Easter Jr. made an accomplishment, just a real unique accomplishment, similar to Shakur Stevenson from fights 9 through 13?
Well, according to Max Kellerman, it happened 1 year. But other than that, no, yeah, it was a really good turnaround.
If you guys want some dirt on Max Kellerman, go to my Twitter.
That's all he's
oh,
got.
Boy.
You're turning on your boy.
Premium content.
I love Max Kellerman. I consider myself a disciple of Max. But the dude, like, there's just too many opportunities to just look at what Max Kellerman has said over the years and just mock him for being, like, just a blowhard. This guy earlier in the season was trying to say that statistically, Aaron Rodgers, who you recognize as the bad man, one of the most talented, probably the most talented quarterback in the NFL, that Andy Dalton was very similar because they had similar stats, which if you follow the NFL, you know that that is completely stupid. Anyway, Tom doesn't know what I'm saying.
I have absolutely no idea.
Fred, you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, but it was kind of a weird disconnect.
Well, Fred also, Max keeps going on about how Tom Brady's going to fall off the cliff, which would be the equivalent of, I don't know, some boxing writer they did do this, but like saying like, oh, Floyd Mayweather's going to fall off the cliff at some point and he's going to get beat. And it's like, yeah, you look stupid. He keeps winning. Anyway, we can move on from the fights. We'll touch on Gervonta Davis, Yuricus Gamboa. That is official. Badu Jack versus John Pascal will be on the undercard, and this fight will take place in Atlanta. Fred, have you bought your tickets yet?
Yeah. Me and three stacks are going.
What about you, Tom? You planning to make the trip down to Atlanta to see this fight?
No, I'm not. I would love to, though.
Atlanta has real good strip clubs, by the way.
Oh, that's kind of interesting, Tom. Why aren't you going to Atlanta?
I have a family. It's just not going to be in the cards.
Oh, you mean it's not a safe place for your family, Tom? Is that what you're saying?
Well, thanks, Fred. No, I mean, look, the reverse. I think this is going to be a fun atmosphere, great fight. It's cool for the PBC to go down there. I think, yes, I am just trying to step over what Fred is implying. But, yeah, look, I think it's cool it's going to be down there. I think it's going to be a good show.
We can move on to Fred, you posted a lot of Tom, you posted a lot of links. So if you're on Twitter, you may have recognized that there was a pretty familiar tweet that kept being perpetuated and tweeted out. And the tweet went a little something like this. Dazen is really paying off. I paid $120 for the year and have seen good fights. And I'm still getting Prorae Taylor, Canelo Kovalev, and Ruiz Joshua 2 before the end of the year. Wilder Ortiz 2 is $75 alone. Hashtag boxing. And so here's the problem. That's a fine tweet. It's okay. Like if you feel that way, rightfully so. That's, to me, this is good value. Now, I wouldn't tweet this, but I would agree with it. Now, here's the problem. Someone messed up and didn't log out of accounts, and they tweeted this from multiple accounts. And so whether that's some like intern who's doing social media or something, they happen to tweet out like the same thing or very, 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 very similar tweets on multiple accounts, including Otha Jones III and Raging Babe, who is a boxing enthusiast, personality, and marketing strategist.
She's actually a promoter.
And well, it's not listed in the Twitter bio, but yes, she is a promoter as well. Okay. Works hand in hand with Russell Peltz. Also had a deal with Avery Sparrow to not be arrested before his fight with Ryan Garcia. But let's not split hairs now. So anyway, someone noticed, like, hey, this is oddly familiar territory here. These are real similar tweets. And so our friend Rollins decided that he was going to get in on the action. And he also wanted to, be a part of the marketing campaign. So he copied that tweet and he pasted it into his Twitter and hit send. And what happened was it kind of went a little viral and everyone started to tweet it out, which is good. Like in my, if I'm the marketing strategist behind this, I'm happy that people kept now. The reason why they're unhappy, and you know, Michael Woods has come to the defense, is like, hey, oh, you know, this isn't happening, and Raging Babe's like, I tweet for myself, blah blah blah, because she's the one who originally wrote it and she's a marketing strategist here. But people just started copying it, it went viral. But like there's also a subset of people that are like trying to act like this never happened and that like this is all legit. And it was just a joke. Like this was just Rollins trying to mess around and people thought it was funny, so they did it too. And like when I tweet, people keep replying with that tweet or versions of the tweet, which is not like it's fine, but I just think it's really weird that they got so defensive about the tweet, because it's like, this is free publicity. This is like if this is the marketing strategy right here. Somehow trick people into repeating what you want, the narrative you want out there. Tom, you a business guy. Wouldn't you agree with that?
I don't mean to cut off Tom on this whole thing.
You could cut off Tom. Tom cuts you off all the time.
Yeah, but you missed the actual origins of this whole thing, which me and Tom played a part in. We were behind the whole thing.
No, you didn't.
Yes, we did.
Okay, let's hear it. You're sitting there playing with Jimmy.
This is exactly what happened. So, what was it? The 22nd, as I'm looking now on Twitter itself.
Okay.
Some user named Martin Mulcahy posted this thing. This is not me shilling for Dazen, not cash a check from them yet. Ha ha. Just an honest evaluation. The Wilder Ortiz 2 card price dropping is $75. However, for $100 a year, I can get Prograde Taylor, Alvarez Kovalev, and Ruiz Joshua on DAZN plus Inoue later this year.
Oh, in a so way, I in saw a that. Public execution? Yep.
Yeah, no, see, that's like, I saw that. Bucks to me. And even though I was drinking, I never addressed this. But then Tom,
so
Tom posted this thing. Tom posted the very tweet in our one chat. And it reminded me, oh, yeah, I gotta make fun of that. And then someone, I saw Raging Babe's tweet, which was on like a Thursday or Friday. And she had her, it was sort of similar, but a bit different. And I just posted, I said, this seems a little weird. I said, why are so many people who say they're not shilling for Dazen posting about the price of the Wilder Ortiz thing? So then it gained momentum with, what's his name? Jevon Bay Area. I probably pronounced his first name wrong. Jevon Bay Area. And he put together a whole thing of screenshots. But then Rollins had started making fun of it. So that's where Rollins came in. But yeah, me and Tom spotted that. And I actually asked Tom if he was going
to
do it.
I actually remember you showed this to me. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
You did show this to me. But Rollins made the joke that caught on.
Oh, yeah. So that's where it got funny. But like I said, we actually we played a part in this whole thing, because I said, I just thought it was weird that they had this one guy talk about DAZN, and then Raging Babe talked about DAZN. Just in like a, why are people just like comparing this thing, you know, between Wilder Ortiz and DAZN, just sort of similar manners. The complete cloning, that's where Rollins came in and started goofing on him. And then some people started to build that through conspiracy. But the main thing is some of us had fun. Some people didn't know, but then there's like guys doing videos about trying to get behind the conspiracy of this. And it was just essentially just started from me and Tom noticing this one tweet and me asking Tom if he's going to do anything with it. And he's like, nah. And so I just made a remark about it. And then we all started having fun with it.
Wait, yeah. So were you paid to shill Dazen?
No. I said, because I didn't tweet. I just noticed that there's like these two different tweets in the same week that sort of seemed like.
Why did Martin, why did everyone get the price wrong? Because it's not $120 a year.
Oh, well, if you Martin subscribed right. a year ago.
Which I did. Then, I do pay $120
a year.
Yeah,
then
it's
$10
a month
right now. It's only $100 going forward. So if you in the past tense subscribed a year ago, you know, your year up to now would have been $120. So it's not really.
Wait, are they changing the price after they did the price change, or from when I signed up? Because I wonder when it's going to switch to $20 on me.
As soon as you got to re-up next year.
I think that already happened in September.
They're probably canceled charging me $20 right now, and I don't even know.
Yeah.
Just say you're going to cancel, and they'll probably reduce your price.
Yeah, look, just to jump in, yeah, they probably will. But
the producer says it's like 12 months from the time that they switched the price, which was like, I don't know, in February or something?
Oh, okay, so they haven't. Yeah, like I said, I'd canceled and resubscribed, so I'm on $20 a month right now.
Why don't you just pay $100?
Fuck that.
Dude, it's great value.
It's paying off.
It's great value.
I don't know what they're going to show in January, but yeah, anyway, yeah, just basically agree with Fred. I mean, Canelo, one, Kovalev, yeah, his
Ruiz Joshua 2, Wilder. It's more value than Wilder is Ortiz 2.
Paying off for sure. Yeah, but look, just totally backing up what Fred was saying. Like, yeah, it just like happened organically because like you first had the Martin Mulcahy tweet, and it's like, wow. I mean, it's something that like Joe Tessitore or like Kriegel would say on ESPN broadcast. Like, I'm not shilling, but, and then it's like proceeds to shill. You know, and it was phrased completely. It's like anyone who's seen like marketing messaging or like political talking points, it's like you have the bullet points, you're trying to get this stuff across. Like, this is the thing we clown Top Rank for, where like there are people at the shows will try to work the media, and you know, they'll have the certain bullet points they're trying to get in, and they'll really try to press it, and that's exactly what this read like. And then, you know, the rage, so it was a very sequential thing. It was like the Martin Mulcahy thing. It's like, this looks like an ad, this looks like astroturfing, he's even making the comment about not shilling. And then the Raging Babe tweet came out, which was almost identical. Again, it was like the same messaging, like calling out literally the same fights, like the same language, but slightly reworded. And then the Oath of Jones thing came out, which was literally exactly the same tweet, which, like you said, it was like he's a days in fighter and someone forgot to log out of the account or something. You know, it was like literally the same thing. And then, you know, that's the thing also, like when people are saying like Rollins came out and it became a meme, you know, some people were just repeating it exactly. A lot of other people started just doing other variations, which were like, I mean, Fred had a bunch of great ones if you go back and look at his Twitter account, but there were some other ones mixed in there, like Boxing News 24. Like, I don't really know that site, but they have an affiliate link and they use the exact same language. I was going through today to try to see, because I think most people now think this was all just like parodies after that, but you know, I don't know most of those accounts, so I kind of clicked through it.
Well, now we don't know the signal from the noise. Thanks, Rollins, idiot.
Yeah, but yeah, there was a Boxing News 24. I was just searching for the Dazen is really paying off, and they used, again, same Dazen is paying off. Boxing fans will still get, again, hashtag Progre Taylor. It was, you know, the same language where it's all in the hashtags. Wait, maybe, for those fights.
Maybe Rollins undermined them and turned it into white noise for boxing fans.
Yeah, because I think those other people, they're just follow the trending thing. So they were trying to get there, you know, trying to make money off this trend there. But yeah, so it's just funny because I remember the origin because I was actually sober. I was just headed to the bar. So anything after that, I tweet. Like, usually, I can't remember most of the things I tweet.
Kovalev can't say the same.
But the very start, you know, that's it. I remember that. I remember the whole process. So it was just a funny moment that is built in this thing where, you know, we got actual writers.
Well, yeah, so to go through it, Steven Espinosa commented on it, Eddie Hearn commented on it in a video. Yeah. I couldn't believe, because I went to bet, you know, we were in the chat, but I didn't see anything on Twitter, you know, after that. I just saw the original tweets when we were talking about it. I didn't see anything Rollins had done. And then I woke up in the morning and my whole Twitter time, I was like, whoa, this joke got really out of hand. But well, this is the final note I want to end on, because there was, like you said, there was a lot of really weird, like, white knighting to, like, Raging Babe's defense.
Relax,
like a lot of people
relax.
Saying like
this guy with the white knighting
we need to protect Raging Babe is being slimed and defamed by it's just like Jesus Christ, come on look,
even
Steven
Espinosa got in on the fun.
Whether Raging Babe is being paid or not, but at a certain point, if like your tweets so sufficiently resemble an ad that it's indistinguishable from a real ad, does like the distinction really matter? I mean, I don't know. That's kind of the note I want to go out on. It's like, I think these writers' tweets speak for themselves.
We're just taking over. That's all we're saying. Sunday Puncher, influential.
We're just trying to get Dazen to pay us to market for them.
Well, that's what I said. I said, come on, we built up the sub, you know,
we
especially
have bots
you.
That and, we can build.
Yeah.
And they wouldn't all tweet the same thing. Like, did you see the other thing where the guy, they just searched Connor Benn and saw like 12 tweets that were all the same? Like, it's clear Dazen's using bots. Yeah. And by the way, just for the record, I'm not even trying to like clown on them for that. I think it's smart. Like, definitely do that. But yeah, if you're going to use bots and stuff, this is a part of like digital marketing and stuff. Here's the thing though. Just don't be mad when people notice it. Just shut up and keep it moving, because as many people that actually notice it, there's also people out there that don't, and like they fall for it.
That's funny that people start paying attention to our opinions and, you know, what are we, just a bunch of goofs. I just found it funny that, especially when people are posting like these guys are making YouTube videos about tracking us down. It was just a funny moment. I really like that. I like this.
Yeah, this is comedy. It's not like, this is just a funny topic.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, I was remembering this because UFC did this. And like you said, this is a common thing where people will get people to post. UFC had a bunch of sports guys post about how they're going to watch the UFC card. And it was all the exact same copy. And it was like Aaron Rodgers and all these guys and people.
Well, that's what Kevin Ioli does. He just does the same thing that they tell him to.
Yeah. He's just printing the marching orders. So
he's a glorified bot.
Essentially. I hate that he changes his profile picture to an emoji. You know, like the Apple. You know, the Apple. If you use on the Apple's Instagram message, you can make that little cartoon emoji now of your face. Because he had some of the best Yahoo, like on the actual Yahoo site, they had a picture that looked like they just fucking shot his dog or something in front of him. Because his mouth is open and he sort of looked stunned. Well, I was going to say he looked like shit his pants.
Stop.
That was worse. So pick which one you like. Because he had this weird, like, his mouth is open. It's like, really? Who picked this? And then they changed it to a suit one. And then I got mad. I was like, well, why did we make fun of it? Because we all just could have kept that picture. And they never would have changed it. But now he's changed it again. And I'm like, no. At least on he's changed it on Twitter. I don't know if he changed it on the Yahoo Sports site.
Okay,
sign up for patreon.com if you missed it, and I will tweet it or I will post it in the Discord.
Okay, so let me just move on from this, but I would say shout out to Javon. Javon Bay Area is the Twitter handle. He's the one who really spotted all this stuff and really kind of set this whole thing going, even though Fred and Tom noticed it earlier but kept it to themselves. Javon's the one that kind of inspired
We started the whole conspiracy. This is why you always try to steal our shine.
Hey, don't do this. Not when I'm shouting someone out. Not when I'm shouting. Let him have it.
Shout out, Javon. Good.
Yeah, saying like he pushed it because a lot more people follow him. So that's when people started liking
him. Steal his followers.
Yeah, I know, but that's it. Well, I was trying to. But see, also in his conspiracy post, he also had Rollins in there too. When we know he's just fucking around.
Well, maybe that's Rollins' alt.
Yeah. See, the Otha Jones one. The Otha Jones one. That's
my alt.
You can't start handing this out. See, this is just like you trying to give credit to Top Rank, man. We did the work here.
Could we talk about drug testing? Damn.
Oh, I didn't think we were going that far. I thought we were wrapping up.
We are. No, we're just going to talk about the drug testing stuff.
A few more notes.
So, as you can tell, we are already almost at the two-hour mark. So we are going to save Canelo Kovla for another podcast where we'll just talk about that, and as well as the other previews for this weekend. There's Brian Castano versus Wally Amatoso. Miguel Burchelt will defend his title against Jason Sosa, which we'll spend an hour and 45 minutes talking about those two fights. By the way, we go on this one. So anyway, let's talk about Avni Yildirim. So I want to hear about Icarus, Fred, but you're going to talk about it anyway. So Avni Yildirim tested positive for, DHCMT or something. Basically, the stuff that the Germans were using, like, I don't know, in the 60s or something. Fred just posting pictures of Kevin Ioli in our chat now. Thank you, Fred.
High quality content.
So Avni Yildirim tested positive in September, and we had resolution by October 22nd or 3rd, which, really should say something to the UK anti-doping to get this Dillian White situation resolved, because the WBC is waiting on their resolution. But anyway, Yildirim was cleared because they found that it was likely contamination. Fred, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, no, it was not contamination. So this is the thing. Okay, the one substance, I'm just looking up because...
By the way, I went super specifically.
Okay, I know the one, DCHMT is a oral turinabol.
That's, you know, the word I was looking for.
So that's the one you're close to. The other one, methyl clostobal, which is really a drug that's never come to market. So that's kind of weird. But it has a history. It's never been used for medical purposes except for doping for the Germans. So in the 60s and 70s. So what? So he failed for two known anabolic steroids, you know, and the WBC doesn't post these results managements. Like, is it, if you go to the USADA thing, and when they have a results management, they will post down. If they went to arbitration, they will post all the information to the arbiters board while the other positions and everything, you know, depending on how far it goes, they will, like, more information comes out. The WBC, I have no idea where the posting is. I think maybe they do a press release, but I'm not sure because it's not on the clean boxing program. VADA will make no comment about any of this. You know, they just sort of hand it off to the WBC because they have no sanctioning power, despite, you know, sort of hinting they might have at one point. But they said they cleared him because it was an inadvertent usage when he went to for treatment for muscle
inflammation.
Yeah, muscle inflammation. And they said eventually that he's cleared to fight and he's not going to lose his status or anything. When he was found with two anabolic steroids, they said, oh, no, the doctors did it. And remember, it's oral turinabol for a reason, because you have to orally ingest it. So it's not like he didn't know he was taking something, you know. So it's just the whole thing. The WBC is just like, unless they start posting this stuff, this is you really can't say, are they trying to hide drug tests? But incidents like this does not help their case, you know. And especially when you wrap up and you really look into their relationship with VADA. You now have Dr. Flip Hemansky, who was the co-founder of VADA with Margaret Goodman. He's now the president of the NABF, which is run by the WBC.
That sounds like a conflict of interest.
Exactly. It's like if these guys came in saying, well, we want to clean up the sport, and yet they have all these terrible ties. Like, these ties are just – it doesn't make it look like you're an independent, you know, arbitrator, even though all the testing is done by independent labs. But here we go with the results management. If it was USADA, it would USADA would be handling results management. You know, a fighter would also have an independent arbiter. With the WBC, they're essentially handling it. And do we really want sanctioning bodies handling the results managements? You know, because if you look at, again, with Big B Miller, he got a 6-month suspension from the WBA. When he's actually a multiple-time failure, if it would have been under USADA in the WADA code, he would have had a 4-year suspension. You know,
I believe the way it works with VADA is that the WBC is actually just in charge here. VADA is not suspending
anybody. Exactly. And this is what's funny is that Thomas Hauser, who was he pushed for VADA, and he's the one who got this, VADA's better than USADA, VADA, 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 VADA. So now we're in the exact same position with them that he criticized the USADA for regarding – actually, it's slightly different. But Eric Morales tested positive for clenbuterol.
You know, contamination, so, of course.
Well, USADA actually didn't really buy his contamination story. They thought the levels were too high, and they actually gave him a 2-year suspension. But that's when they dealt with it. But at the time, the New York State Athletic Commission – didn't recognize outside third-party testing at all. So that's when they said, well, does Danny want to go ahead with the fight? And Danny said, yeah, I'll take the fight. I don't care. But that's because New York wouldn't have given a shit if, like, because they said, we do not recognize USADA's tests. So that was at that point. So, but Hauser has used that thing to beat the drum that USADA is somehow shady because they let this fight go on because he's promoting VADA, which is run by his friends. So, but here again with VADA, unless a fighter has an actual current license, they only inform who the contract says they will inform, which usually is just the sanctioning body and sometimes the opponent or sometimes not. It depends. But usually they will inform the opponent. But the commissions, unless the fighter has an active license, they will not inform the commission that someone failed. It all goes back to the WBC. You know, so that, again, is like you're leaving these sanctioning bodies in charge of it where you have this Avni Iljarim test where the guy's got two steroids and that's it. Even if he wasn't aware that they were going to give him steroids, every fighter, like the athletes, are responsible for what they put in.
Right. And that isn't that one of USADA's policies? Like, look, you're responsible for your body.
Yeah, that's part of the WADA code, because before the WADA code was established, it was essentially they had to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that the athlete knowingly cheated.
Which is almost impossible.
Yeah, exactly, because it can always be something, you know.
Right.
They can say, well, it wasn't me, it was someone else, and this and that. So they'd have to have a really clear path and really strong evidence to push it. But that's why the WADA code changed everything. It became more of, no, you've got to explain how this got in your system.
Well, the other thing is, I'm pretty sure this is not a substance that is being used in modern German medicine. Now, I could be wrong. I'm not German. I've never...
It's not.
It's, hey, listen, have you ever had to get treatment for muscle inflammation in Germany? I don't think so. So yeah, I'm not going to say without a shadow of a doubt that they did not contaminate Yildirim.
No, because
it's
actually
definitely suspicious.
No, yeah, because the second drug, the methyl one, it will actually say it has no recognized medical usage. Now, it is used sometimes as a dietary supplement, but again, oral turinabol and these other ones, they are not recommended drugs for human consumption.
Maybe because they thought Yildirim wasn't steroids. A human.
You know, like there are some steroids, of course, that do have recognized medical usages. These aren't two of them. These two aren't.
I have another possibility here. John Jones, similar situation, got caught with the metabolites of this drug. John Jones was taking dick pills. Do you think that Yildirim was taking the same kind?
No, because Yildirim said it was part of his medical treatment for the muscle inflammation.
Maybe the muscle inflammation was to get a certain muscle inflamed.
Maybe it was. I don't know, because I haven't seen the WBC's result management, because you can't find the fucking thing. So I don't know. I'll try writing them again, but it's whatever they're doing. They're not posting
Stan
it.
Stan over here writing letters and not getting an answer from the WBC.
Well, hey, I wrote VADA and they didn't answer me either, because I was going to try to be, hey, why don't we actually try to be legitimate people instead of just goofing on them? Because, you know me, get a couple beer in me and I'll fucking say anything. So I thought I'd actually have some journalism background, you know. Well, I'm going to be a real journalist and get a job like, you know, Ariel Helwani. And
not like me. I'm not a real journalist.
Yeah. Shout out. I will work for money. So it's really a garbage fire if you consider the fact that David Benavidez lost his belt because he used cocaine, which is not prohibited except under VADA's testing program.
Nor has it been confirmed to enhance performance.
No, like it is only prohibited in competition because they don't want people drunk or high while they fight. So that's the only thing. They've never cared if you use like cocaine or alcohol. You know, they just don't want you high on the night of the fight.
Shout out Mike Tyson.
But what VADA does is that it took everything on the out of competition allowed list for WADA, and they just made everything's prohibited. So that's how they get so many, you know, hits.
Everything's prohibited, but there are exceptions where it's allowed because it's contamination.
Yeah, except when
and you're not actually responsible for what goes in your body knowingly or unknowingly.
Yeah, everything's prohibited except when you're using two of these well-known doping steroids
that were literally part of a national doping scandal-like program. Yeah.
Yeah, the biggest East Germany. And also, again, like John Jones is the same thing, too. Like, he used the oral Trenibol, you know, which he tried to say.
I feel like I read that that's what they found. Yildirim is the same thing, the oral.
Yeah. That's the DCHMT. Yeah, essentially.
I believe that's the right acronym. But
yeah, but sometimes it depends, because it gets kind of tricky. But that's not a whole thing, because sometimes it's a formulation of it. Sometimes it's Trenibol. Because, like, when people call these things Trenibol, a lot of these times these are just the underground name. Drug terms. Yeah, the street names. You know, it's not. It's just because all the steroids, the legitimate steroids, all ended with "ol" and they're like stenozolol and Winstrol and everything. Danibol. Those were like either, yeah, those were usually, these were actual medically recognized. Yeah. So that's why people just put street names on them. So sometimes you'll see DCHMT, and sometimes they change the formulation on them. So that's why they'll sometimes jump back and forth. But essentially it's the same thing as oral Trenibol. But essentially, so here you got a case where somehow the WBC in this about a month cleared a guy and say, oh no, he just had a medical procedure. And it's like, oh, what the fuck? His medical procedure was using two steroids. So yeah.
It's a strong possibility. It's the dick pills.
That would never fly under USADA, who, if you want to know, like with the Nate Diaz stuff, they have now implemented threshold levels with USC. So,
thresholds. For, is there anything else you want to say about the Nate Diaz thing and USADA, or should we keep it moving?
No, just because it is a legitimate angle. See, so what they're doing is, for a lot of these supplements, they know that do have contamination histories. If it's a certain level, they will say, okay, this is sort of like, you know, when Canelo tested for clenbuterol. They said, okay, from all our previous examples of this happening, we know these levels are consistent with contamination usage. So that's essentially what they're bringing in. And because UFC can sort of be their guinea pig, they're doing this. Now, of course, it looks bad, and I'll keep making fun of the UFC for essentially just joking that they're letting Nate Diaz dope just to save the night. But there is a bit of legitimacy to what they're doing. They just have they have some weirdness where Nowitzki was talking about, well, maybe Trenibol could be a threshold level. It's like, no. You know, things like Osterine, which they know can be, has contamination histories and everything. It's a little weird, but you let some of these things go, you know. Like it's a lot of these drugs that are showing up. Just the problem is there's no regulation of the supplement company, which is another big, long political thing. But that's it. That's why these things keep happening. That's why you can have these compounding pharmacies that are essentially making steroids for people, and then they contaminate the next person because they're just lazy and cleaning out the machinery, you know.
It's possible. But anyway, we should move on.
Yeah, like I said, that's a whole big thing, because, again, the reason why the WADA code made athletes responsible for it is because they also know that there were supplement companies, especially with bodybuilding, that were directly marketing supplements to bodybuilders that contained steroids. But then they'd have the cover of, well, in the supplement. But again, that's all different. That the levels that they're seeing when they test these things, like I said, the supplements have a very, very low level of this. But again, it's like, well, okay, unless you're testing the athletes constantly, you know, like, there is a window there. And so that's where WADA didn't want to get down to. Like, do we have to sort of get to these threshold level things? But now they want to sort of push back there, just because from everyone sort of lost the fever to enforce doping on the level it was back in the late 90s. You know, because at that point, Congress was starting to get involved, and they're pretty much, hey, guys, we're going to start.
Vince was innocent, okay?
Yeah, exactly. Well, there you go. Yeah, they're big things. Baseball, football, everybody was getting put on notice, especially like the major league sports, because they have antitrust provisions where they don't get sued for violating antitrust. So that's why MLB. They sort of start to conform. Yeah.
Anyway. You know,
Yeah. Anyway,
Let's move on. We're giving away too much.
I know it's going bad, and you can even edit that out if you give a shit. Who cares? But I'm saying it's a complicated thing when you start getting into what Nate Diaz is, and a lot of times there's a very complex issue on some level. But then for a thing like the WBC, they sort of it's ridiculous, you know. So that's all I want to see, which is a lot. But
all right, Tom. What do you have to say about former British team Great Britain Olympian Anthony Ogogo signing with AEW?
Did that happen?
That has happened. Anthony Ogogo, former professional fighter who is legally blind, signed with AEW.
I didn't know that. I wonder if he'll have an eye patch as part of his gimmick. Oh, I remember him. Yeah, I remember when he watched Out of the Sport. Yeah, that was kind of a sad situation.
Yeah, he was in Match Room. Also had a Golden Boy deal.
Right. That's why I was confused when I looked him up. The first thing that came up was Golden Boy, but it was like, oh, yeah, okay, I remember who he is. Wow, I had no idea. That's really weird. Yeah, I don't know. I guess that's part of AEW's gimmick that they're trying to present themselves as a more sports-based presentation. You know, and then they have people coming in on skateboards and jumping out of the ring with their hands in their pockets. So anyway, figure that one out.
Hey, you better show some respect to Orange Cassidy. I will go over there and slap the taste out your mouth, Tom.
Not my favorite.
Anyway, so like I said earlier, we are going to save the Canelo Kovalev discussion for another podcast where it is the front and center topic of discussion. Couldn't do that here with lots of stuff to recap. And so, but I don't know that Tom or Fred will be on the podcast. We'll see. So in case you're not, just take 30 seconds. Tom, what is your take on the fight?
Yeah, a few other notes I want to get to before we sign off. But
holy Christ, Tom, answer the question. Come on.
Oh my God, we're over 2 hours in.
Yeah, look, I'm looking forward to the fight. I think I definitely disagree with the original take of, you know, the hipster take that Canelo is just going to blow him out. I definitely get where people are saying that.
He's going to make him quit.
Canelo, Kovalev has shown so much weakness, but I'm interested to see what Buddy McGirt can do with this old, decrepit, shriveled up, washed version of Kovalev against a much smaller fighter. My one quick salient comment before I move back, throw it back to one of you guys. I was looking up pictures of Canelo versus Rocky Fielding for an article we're putting out this week, and like his physique just looks so bizarre. Like he's so much just like thicker on his frame than we're used to seeing with boxers. I don't know what he's even going to look like at 175, how he's going to be able to move. I mean, I think people are putting a little bit too much into the Rocky Fielding fight to say, oh, you know, just because he bopped Rocky Fielding and he fell down, that's going to happen to Kovalev. The thing which is sticking in my mind, I'll keep this quick before I throw it back, is something we were talking about in the Josh Taylor fight with Progre, which is if you really commit to the body, but you aren't hurting your opponent, that can produce a bad situation for you. And I think it's entirely possible that, you know, the so much bigger Kovalev is not going to be that bothered by the stuff that Canelo does in this fight, especially if Kovalev is really able to make Canelo work to have to try to set that stuff up. You know, if Canelo can't just get in there and just bomb him out to the body, this could be a very long night for Canelo. Anyway, that's my take.
What about yours, Fred?
Fucking cinnamon forever, come on.
You have 30 seconds. You want to use any
more? Okay, you want me to fill it in?
You don't have to, see. But I mean, it's just giving you some time.
I'm going to make it 5 minutes because I don't know.
You're not Tom. Don't do that.
Canelo, when he fought UK fighters, never backed down. They never pushed him around. He knocked their ass out. So if Kovalev, who was getting hurt to the body by some goofy UK fighter, there's no way Canelo can't hurt him to the body.
Nathan Cleverley never hurt him to the body.
No, that guy he just fought that.
I know.
I know the joke. I can't tell anything anymore. I'm so confused. Tom, so many tests. Yeah. Anthony Yard. Canelo.
Okay. Got it.
All right. How can you get a ride or die with Canelo? Come on.
I'm with you, but I'm not ride or die with Canelo. I mean, I like Canelo, but I think it's really obvious how this fight's going to play out. Canelo is going to whoop him. So we will be back with the full-length podcast, though, because there's so many other facets of that fight to talk about. Plus, we got to talk about Ryan Garcia on the undercard against Romero Duno and how Ryan Garcia's O could go. Miguel Burchelt defends against Jason Sosa. Brian Cassano faces Wale Amatoso. Xavier Martinez returns on Showbox, along with Richardson Hitchens. So we have another stacked weekend coming up. Lots of fights, lots of boxing to watch. Plus, you got, I guess the World Series will be over by then. Houston will win. So there's my prediction there. So
what about Tom's other points? You're trying to play the wrap-up music. I was excited. What are your other points?
Oh, just very, very quick. That, you know, it's like the momentum is totally gone here. But just wanted to touch quickly on the Chris Eubank versus Matt Korobov announcement. I just think that's interesting. We had sort of wondered, and we had talked about before, I had said that Jermall Charlo's career was kind of left without momentum. You know, he was fighting the Hogan fight, which is not the worst thing in the world, but didn't really see what his direction was going into 2020. And I think that's pretty cool to have Chris Eubank there. Chris Eubank, his dad has become even more relevant than ever, thanks to all the Twitter memes. So, I think that's pretty cool. And it was interesting seeing Eddie Hearn completely melt down about that fight happening. He seemed incredulous that Chris Eubank turned down his offer to do more domestic showdowns. So that was a fun bit of it as well.
All I want to say to finish the podcast is Dazen is really paying off. I paid $120 for the year and I've seen really good fights, and I'm still getting hashtag Prograde Taylor, hashtag Canelo Kovalev, and hashtag Ruiz Joshua 2 before the end of the year. Wilder Ortiz 2 is $75 alone. Thank you guys for listening.